Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under The Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course. To the Carpcast, introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chops. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie. Ooh,
yeah. Ooh. So hello and welcome to episode 51 of the Carpcast. Have you caught any 51s, Mark?
I did, but it was spawned out at 46.
Yeah.
No, that's my claim.
No, it was a 56, that one. No, 58. 58, 10. 58, 12. 58,
yeah, something. It was 51 that spring.
It was about 20 different ways that year. Got caught loads, didn't it?
No, it's seven.
Yeah. We are talking about the fat lady, by the way, as we talk about quite often. I had a 51 from Nash's this year, didn't I? And I had a fish bigger than that this week, or last week, but more on that later. As you know, I went to the Graviers in Dijon in France. I don't know how I'm going to start this. I did a trip report, I started recording an in session, so I think we will move through that and do everything in order. So yeah, we won't talk about this for now. We'll do the in session as it goes, because there is quite a bit to discuss, and what will probably turn into Jamie's rant.
Jamie's rant.
But more on that later. What have you been up to, Mark?
I went fishing. I've caught a fish as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, remember the pinpoint hooks competition I put on? I put myself under quite a bit of pressure to actually go and catch a fish, because there was well over 200 people guessed the weight of the fish I would catch.
Yes, I didn't win, I know that.
Now, what did you guess? You were saying about 18 pounds, you're full of optimism.
19.15 or something, I think, or 19 pounds something.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, what, 26 something, wasn't it?
Yeah, 26.15, and no one guessed the exact weight, but we did get one fellow, Richard Hinchcliffe. He was 1 ounce off.
Richard came on the first Carpcast social, didn't he, at Cromwell?
Yeah, same chap. Yeah. He said in the messages when I told him, he says, it's karma. You know, he's won that after lending us his bait boat, which is what we use for Sean to catch his fish on the left side of Windy Point.
Yes. It's, thank you, Richard, and congratulations. I don't know if he's had his hook sharpening gear yet. Has it gone out to him?
Yeah, I've posted them both out, and, you know, I've totally forgot the name of the other winner, but he was also, like, you know, 2 or 3 ounces off.
Yeah.
And, well, thank you for everyone for entering and putting me under pressure.
Yeah, you know. I think people like a competition, don't they? So,
definitely.
I think we're going to have a look at doing some more Carpcast competitions in the near future. We are working on that, try and give our lovely listeners some free stuff. Everybody loves free stuff, don't they? So
yes, it's my favourite four-letter word.
I've got a few more favourite than that. Some rude, yeah. Some illegal. So let's leave it right there.
Also, I had my first outing with the JRC crew at the Carp in the Park show.
That's the outdoor festival at Billing Aquadrome, isn't it?
That's the one. A
true review on it.
Yeah. It's in its second year. It's I think it's described best described as maybe a bit of a work in progress. You know, a lot better than last year, talking to the people who were there last year. Last year it was too spread out. You know, this time round, the other stalls were in kind of like a big oval, so you can like walk round. But yeah, I think yeah, I do think it's got legs. You know, we as you know from doing shows yourself, it's you know, a massive learning curve. And, yeah, I enjoyed it. It's the only thing with outdoor shows, you're always at the mercy of the weather.
Yeah, that's where I think, you know, if I was doing it myself, I'm not saying we won't do an outdoor show at some point, it's something we've looked at, but I would do it similarly to how festivals, obviously our background is the music business. You know, when we started the production on the Northern Angling show, it was based around Lee Spence, my partner in it, him and my many years of experience in the music industry. Lee's played and run festivals, you know, hosted arenas, you know, some very high level music stuff. And then I would take the you know, lots of festivals are outdoors, and I would take the modus operandi from those, I think. And I would have a big top or some sort of a very large marquee, and even centralise the out stuff in that. You're not at the mercy of the weather. It keeps people in one area. You get an atmosphere. You know, there's all those kind of things I've heard. You know, about you know, that this Carpenter Park, you know, all the kind of things will be solved with that one problem. So anybody from the organisers is listening, tell me how to mind my own business. But I would have some sort of outdoor cover. It just solves all problems, and it just improves it in so many ways, logistically, and you know, for atmosphere and stuff like that. I mean, you can have open-sided, like they do, like big circus tops that have just got no sides on them, so they're not at the mercy of the wind, and everybody's covered, and it keeps an atmosphere. I mean, I go to a lot of festivals. I've actually got 3 festivals coming up in the next 4 weeks, believe it or not. I can't remember how detailed I went into my road trip last week, but I leave in the morning. I'm going to try and get this carp cast out, so I'm going to get it to you actually, Mark, and you can release it Saturday afternoon for me. I'm going to finish the editing tomorrow morning, which is Friday, because I will be heading to Hull to get on the ferry, the overnight ferry, into Amsterdam. We're flying, we're driving straight down, one day drive, 12 hours to Lake Bled in Slovenia, that you'll all know from previous Eurobanks 2 last year that Nash did. Fishing there for 10 days. We are then heading to Croatia to a music festival. Then heading back to Amsterdam for some more fishing and another music festival on the Sunday. And then then I'm home for not quite, no. No, we've got some stuff going on in Amsterdam. I'm not sure it's my place to say, but there will be some filming, and it will be available at some point in the future. So that's about as much I'm going to say on that. And then I get home to England, and a few days later we're going to Camp Festival, which is on the south coast, which is a big family festival. Highly recommend it if you have never been and want somewhere to take the kids, their first festival experience or whatever. It's huge. So it wins top family festival every year. There's just too many people to name on the bill, but it's very arty as well. There's lots of like theatre shows and workshops and music workshops. It's run by Rob DeBank, who's the Radio 1 guy. He's run it for years now, and it's very large and an extremely good festival. Stuff for adults and loads of stuff for the kids as well. They have like a big kids field. They have a teenagers bit where you can just dump them all weekend. I'm taking my little one with one of her school friends, so they're like 15, 16 now, so I guess we won't even see them for the weekend, and my missus and I can have a party. That's the plan. But yeah, 3 festivals in the next 2 weeks and a hell of a lot of fishing. I'm hoping that I'm going to come back with lots of stories of carp. There's a little bit of school doggery going to go down. I mean, there's you know, my favourite type of fishing, which is basically guesting, I believe, is the politically correct term for carp anglers. Yeah, there's a little bit of that to be done on there, I think. I think I'm told the locals do kind of fish at nights. I mean, you're not allowed to set any kit up, you're not allowed masses of equipment, you're not allowed shelters, brollies, beds or anything like that. So I mean, it is going to be proper just probably just fishing into dark a little bit. But I'm led to believe that's how the locals fish it. And you know me, when in Rome, do what the Slovenians do. And I shall be in Slovenia doing what the Slovenians do. And hopefully catch some fish. We're having a bit of a holiday while we're there as well. We're camping and drinking, and there's three couples going. Alan Blair said he might even get out to see us at some point. Said he's, if he can, he's going to fly up for a couple of days and have some, come and say hello, have some fun. But yeah, there's some big fish in there, and I hope we're going to get amongst them. As you will know, I went to Gravier's last week, and I made a little bit of a blog while I was doing it.
In session.
Vive la France. We are at the Channel Tunnel, Brexiting out of the country as we speak. Sad day for English politics. But we've got Sash. So, we've done the English side of the journey. We're legally in France, just boarding the train, heading to Gravier's in search of un grand poisson, apparently, known as the Scar, which is a £90 carp. Or the second one, we don't know what's going on. Apparently the fish still haven't spawned, but our groups are ready to spawn, so Luke Moffat, the owner, is... he basically wants to speak to us regarding where we're allowed to fish and stuff. We obviously don't want to fish for spawning fish, but we don't want to be sat camping in France either. So we've got to decide what the score is when we get there. The weather is going cooler over there. They've got storms today and then low 20 degrees. So if they haven't spawned by the end of today, I don't think they're going to spawn this week. So as to whether the lake's going to be restricted where we can fish, or if he ropes off the areas where the fish are, it's going to make a big difference to our week, of course. But we can't do anything about the weather, so we'll update you when we get to the lake. Vive la France. So we're on the lake. We've had a draw for swims or for the side. We're all on the same point peg. Been and bought our shopping this morning. Bit of a heavy head for a few beers last night in the hotel. Lee ate his lobster at £100 a pop.
Balling. Worth every penny, mate.
Worth every penny. But we're on the lake now. It's a bit of a quandary. I've come out first in the draw out the three of us. And I wish I'd have come last, to be honest. Because the gamble is, I think there's two areas that could almost certainly produce fish. And one area that is probably only going to do the odd bite, but potentially I've just got a hunch that the big one might come from that side if it gets caught.
Could
be over £100. The fish haven't spawned yet. The weather's actually gone quite cool, overcast and stormy today, and the fish seem to have moved off the margins. I mean, we're not allowed to fish in the margins at all, which is kind of where the fish want to spawn. They're all grouped up around the edges of the lake. So there are restrictions to the fishing. We can't fish where we want to. We've got to fish kind of 15 yards off the bank, but you know, in the deeper water. So we are restricted a little bit, but I think this fish to be caught, it looks very carpy today. There's a cool wind, the wind's blowing up this end of the lake, and I'm in a quandary. As the obvious choice is to pick the middle of the point peg. There's always fish. And there could be, I don't know, I think, I mean, the average size in it is pretty good. There aren't that many fish under 40, especially now, pre-spawning. We've just been told there might be as many as 50, 60 pounders in it. Certainly 170, and then a good 80 and a good 90. That could potentially be 100 at the minute, pre-spawning. So I don't know what to do. I kind of wish I'd come last in the draw, not first. But my gut instinct's telling me to pick the peg, the right-hand side, which doesn't do as many fish. It's probably the worst choice out of the lot for guaranteed fish. But
potentially the best one. The two areas I've seen the scar in on the previous visits when I've sort of watched it in the edge have been areas that picking the right hand side kind of covers. So I think if you choose the right, you're choosing less fish, but potentially the one. So that's kind of where my gut is. And I think I might just pick the right side. I don't know.
In session.
So I'll check back in session with me shortly. What else we got, Mark?
Well, do you want a worth a look?
Go on.
Worth a look.
Me.
Okay.
I'm not vain enough to say I'm worth a look, but if any of our friends from the Hull area, on next Saturday, which is the 16th of July, I'll be in the Hull Fishing Republic store all day. So if you want to come in, have a chat, you know, I'll have my rig box and bits and bobs with me as well. And come and punish me. Yeah. And spend lots of money as well, make me look good.
Go and learn how to tie bream rigs. Yay.
Yeah, yeah. And you just can't leave it alone, can you? Any breaming graviers, or have we got to listen?
Yes, there is lots and lots of skimmers. Yes, millions of them. Millions of them.
Bother you? Did you catch them?
When you tow in 250 yards, 200 yards sometimes, to get picked up by a 4-pound skimmer is not fun. It took a lot of them out. I mean, you just get the anglers to knock them on the head. I think they've been slinging them over the fence for years. Last two trips I've been over there, they did. But they weren't too much of a pain in the arse this time. Spenny had a couple, but not too much of a pain in the arse. But yeah, more on graviers in a bit. Once again, our first ever sponsor of the Carpcast is DNA Baits at dnabaits.com. They've been with us nearly a year now.
It's quite a while.
It is a long, long time. Yeah, I've been waiting for Jason to say, right, we've had a good stint now. But he hasn't. So dnabaits.com is the place where you can get some fantastic baits. As you will know, if you listen to this show regularly, they do some great stuff. Quite a few of our guests on the show are DNA consultants, DNA users. And some of them have had some cracking fish this year. Obviously, we had Jason Walker on, who caught one of the most desirable fish in the country, and certainly the northwest, the angry fish from the Manchester Park Lake. He had that on DNA amongst other stuff. I fished with Roger Bacon, one of my pals, and an extremely good angler and fussy about his bait. He's super fussy about what he uses, and he's a DNA guy. I witnessed a mega session that he had on the S7 earlier this year. Obviously Rob Hughes, Mark Holmes, who else, what are the top guys are?
Mark Bartlett, Lee Morris.
Yeah, there's a host of top anglers use their stuff, which is an endorsement in itself. And you can get an extra discount off all their products at dnabaits.com by using the code CARPCAST5, and you'll get an extra 5% discount. They do loads and loads of post-free packages deal. There's fluoro pop-up deals, fluoro candy stick deals, fluoro wafters. They do a Zig Pack, which is a sticky sweet liquid. You get some Fox Zigger liners, get like there's all sorts of stuff in there. They do boilie deals as well, and again they're all post free, delivered to your door. There are various ones. The most common ones, you can get like a 5-kilo boilie deal of any of their bait boilies, including the new switch that everybody's raving about. 5-kilo boilies and a pot of hook baits for £45 delivered. You can have deal two, which is the boilies, hook baits and a litre of choice of your liquid. They do the same packages for 10 kilos, 50 kilos. They do a 50 kilo of freezer bait. You can split it into a couple of different sizes, and you get cork dust wafters, cork dust pop-ups, a litre of hydro wheat or beta stim. It's £320 that one. Again, you can get the extra 5% using the code CARPCAST5. Check out their website. And something I have seen, I've seen it on the net this week, but it's a DNA thing, and that's they are advertising for, they call them advocates, which is essentially probably a better term for what most bait companies used to call field testers, where nobody actually field tested. You just basically get a discount on the bait, and you are encouraged to promote the bait via catch reports, you know, in the weeklies, the Carp Talk and stuff, articles in magazines and so on. And and DNA are currently they're currently looking for people to represent their company, and they call it a bait advocate, which I think is a much better term than which is a much better term than a field tester, because you're not really field testing most of the time. Most bait companies have a very select group of people that they trust, know how they fish, and use those to test results, but that's long before any bait hits the market. So I like what DNA have done there. They've probably the Yorkshire in them as well. They've probably just said it how it is. So you can apply to DNA. If you have a look on Facebook on the DNA page, they've got a sponsored ad running as well. If you inquire, and I think they're quite keen on people that are going to be good representatives for the brand. So I don't think they're particularly after, you know, the guy that goes out and catches everything and you know, all the big fish from everywhere. I think they're looking for ambassadors, for people that, you know, friendly, outgoing people, get on with people on the bank, obviously non confrontational, political, maybe. You know, they're looking for nice people to represent. I know one of our listeners, Heapy Bob, who runs the official Carpcast fan page. I know he was interested in it the other day, and I've had a read through, Bob, and it is something that I think might suit you. It does look like you know, that you tick the boxes from what I've read. You can apply, essentially. If you have a look on the DNA page, it tells you exactly what they want. It's just basically a list of where you're fishing, where you have been fishing, kind of a brief carp fishing history. And yeah, they're obviously looking to have a little push on the bait. So DNABaits.com, use the code CARPCAST5 when you check out, and have a look at their Facebook page as well, the DNA Baits page, and you may be able to apply if you're a serious angler that fishes fairly regularly and are fairly literate and friendly. Then you probably tick the boxes, and their bait is great. So there we go. I mean, we mentioned Pinpoint Hooks earlier as well, Mark. They were good enough to come on as a sponsor for 4 weeks to the CARPCAST. They launched with an offer, which is, well, a competition where we've already given two of their hook sharpening kits away. I used the hook sharpening kit. I used it all last week on Graviers, and you've been using them as well, haven't you?
Oh, you're not kidding. I've been getting carried away. I've done my toenails, the cat's claws, the knives and forks in the house with it. Everything's sharp, mate.
Yeah, they're a German company, pinpoint-hooks.de for Deutschland, but they've just started a UK version of the site as well, pinpoint-hooks.co.uk. And again, you can get a discount, a 10% discount, using the code CARPCAST10 when you check out. They sell hand-sharpened hooks. You can actually send them your hooks, they'll sharpen them. You can buy the kits off them to do it yourself. They have hand-sharpened hooks of their own brands that are, I believe, they're the old Ace hooks, aren't they?
Yes, they are. They're patterns from exactly the same supplier. So if you like the old Ace hooks, getting these and getting with a mega sharp point on, and the fish don't stand a chance.
No, they don't. What else do they do? They sell lots of different brands of hooks. So, like, you know, whatever your favorite hook is, there's a very good chance that they do super sharp versions of them, or extra sharp, hand sharpened versions of them. Gardner, Corder, Fox, Nash, obviously their own hooks, which are I believe, very similar to the Ace hooks, the Next Gen Plus hooks, which are the same as the Ace Razor Points. The hook service, you can buy the, you know, all the sharpening kits, which have everything in them, from the LED little magnifying glass to the sharpening stones to the two different types of file. And if you would like to stock their gear as well, then you should also go and check out pinpoint-hooks.co.uk. And there, if you have a fishing shop or some sort of online business you would like to stock their products, Mark and I both use it, and we like them, don't we, Mark?
Yeah, I can wholeheartedly endorse their products. I was, well, as you know, we've said before, we're not going to advertise crap. So yes, we're very happy to have Pinpoint on board.
Yes, we are. I've been looking at Facebook this week. I've noticed that a lot of work's been going on the Nash Royston New Day Ticket Lake, which is Royston, sort of Cambridgeshire, Essex border. There's a two lake complex that Kevin bought a year or two ago now. I think he bought it. They've been doing work to get it open as a day ticket lake. I know they've spent fortunes on stockings. There was an original stock of fish already in there. And we are doing a trip, aren't we, Mark? We're doing a carp cast social on there in August.
Yes, it's closer than you think. It's out of the middle of August.
Yes, we have Fired Up Barbecues doing the food for us on the Saturday evening. We're having a bit of a social. We've got Alan Blair is going to be in attendance. He's going to do a talk for us on the lake, and he's going to spend a bit of time with everybody as well. If you want to meet Alan in person, do a bit of fishing, chat, get some tips off him while having a few beers, an excellent barbecue. Fiedupbarbecues.co.uk, by the way, is where you book them. Been looking at pictures of some of their events recently, actually, and I cannot wait to get some of their food down me again. It was pretty special, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, even the barbecue breakfasts, they just get you salivating. You know, Richard, he does a cracking job. He makes barbecuing an art form.
He does. It is an art form and one that I've previously not been good of. And the downside of it is, Mark, you and I are actually cooking the breakfast this time because Richard's got another job on the Sunday, I think. So he'll be away first thing in the morning. So, yes, you and I shall be breakfast cooking. But, yeah, Richard's doing the main meal on the Saturday night. We have four places left. I hadn't been to Royston, so I didn't know how many pegs there were, so we only sold 20 places. I think we can probably fit 25 people on there comfortably. I was looking on the net on Matt Rhodes, who's one of the Nash consultants, and he's bailiff at Cromwell as well. He's been down there doing some work parties and stuff, and getting a chance to fish. I think he's there all this week, actually, he was saying. But yeah, he talked me through all the pegs, the double and single pegs, and there are quite a few. There's a good sort of 34, 35 pegs on there across the two lakes, so we can sell another five places. The cost is £250. That gets you your food Friday night, Saturday morning, Saturday night, and Sunday morning, including the barbecues. We'll supply a load of beers for the social. You get some coaching from Mark and myself. You get Alan Blair, who's going to be there as well. And just a downright good social. It's a way of supporting our show and a way of catching some fish. And the lake is not open to the general public until September. So we've got exclusive use of a lake that's hardly been fished in years. And is stuffed full of fish. Everybody's going to catch a few, I think. There are a lot of fish in there. I know Nashie's spent thousands and thousands and thousands on stockings over the last couple of years, plus the original stock. I think the biggest they've had out, they've had quite a few 30s, up to 39, I think, so far, which is just the lads that have been, fishing the odd afternoons and days, doing work parties up there. It's very different. It's supposed to be very nice. It's an old chalk pit, and you can come and fish with us. We'll all hopefully catch a few fish. It's my birthday weekend as well, so we will be sinking a few beers on the Saturday night. I'll be a year older and hopefully wiser at midnight on the Saturday night.
Wiser, really.
We're going to sell five places. I know there was a hell of a lot of interest. We sold out pretty much within a couple of weeks of putting this on sale. So we are releasing five more places. It's only £250. You get quite a lot for that for the weekend, and obviously the chance to fish an exclusive lake that's going to be one of the premier day ticket lakes in the country over the next few years. You've seen what Nashie has done with his Nash Lakes in Essex, the church and the cops, and it's exactly the same thing's going to happen here. I know they've been feeding the lake with Nash bait for quite some time. These fish are growing, and it's going to be a ridiculously top lake, and you can have a chance to fish it exclusively. How do they book, Mark, if they would like to come along?
they send me a message on Facebook, Twitter, or even the Capcast Facebook page, and we'll take it from there. I'll send you all the information of the weekend we've got, and if you want a book, we'll carry on from there. I'll let you know how we do it.
Yes, the 12th, 13th and 14th of August, that weekend, we set up on Friday the 12th, about midday. We'll do a draw for swims, and we fish till Sunday lunchtime, which is the 14th, my birthday. I think you can also pay a deposit on the Carpcast website, can't you? Carpcast.com. I think there's a button there where you can just reserve a place if you do not want to miss out. Now there's a few extra places spare. If you don't want to miss out, get yourself straight on there, book it, and you will be there. I think you can pay a deposit. There's a button to pay like half the money in one go, and we'll be chasing you in the next few weeks for the second half, should you wish to split the payment.
Also, if you do that, message me as well, so I can just keep my records up to date, and because the last thing we want to do is overbook and disappoint people. So
yeah, I mean, we've left there's probably going to be four or five of us there as well, you know, Alan, myself, you, but I think it can comfortably fit 35 people, so if we sell 25, there'll be a bit of room anyway. So if you want to come, you're probably not going to miss out, you know. We can 25, 26, 24 doesn't really make any difference, you know. But yeah, we just thought we'd let you know that a few places have, well, thanks to Matt Rhodes for giving me the scope on exactly how many pegs there are on there. And Matt can't recommend it highly enough as well. And I think he's going to come down, actually. He said he was going to join us for the weekend as well, come and help out and whatever. So yes, it's in the middle of August, and come and fish with us and Alan Blair as well. And if you want to support the Carpcast in any other way, if you just fancy, you can buy the Carpcast extras. You'll be pleased to know that when I'm back from Lake Bled, we will be releasing two Carpcast extras in a row. I think Mark's got pretty much all the material together now. Obviously I'm away for best part of 3 weeks, but as soon as I'm back, all the people have been asking is about the next Carpcast extra. We'll be getting a couple out straight away in one go, two, maybe even three, and we've got some cracking guests lined up for that. But if you want to buy the group of the previous guests that we had, which was Alan Blair, Kevin Nash, Daryl Peck, Ronnie DeGroot, Frank Warwick, and who was the other one?
You've just reeled off all the ones I had in my mind.
You can buy the previous set of those, an extra 10, 12 hours of Carpcast content. It's only $14.99. You can get that on our website as well, carpcast.com. You can also buy clothing. I'll tell you what, we're doing actually, Mark. We were a competition. We were giving away one place on the Royston Social for free to anybody to the best picture that we receive wearing an item of our Carpcast clothing, either the Carp Gods give a t-shirt, one of the hats, or the hoodie that we sell. You can have a look at them on the carpcast.com. We've got two very good entries, haven't we, for this competition so far. There's one chap went to lots and lots of effort to kind of get in one picture all the things we talk about. There was a carp and not sheep in there, there was slack lines, there was what else was in it?
Jaffa cakes.
Yeah, there was a whole load of stuff. The chap went to a lot of effort. He is I would guess he's probably winning, although we did have another very good picture. We might have to have a vote on this, but yeah, there is still time during the 3 weeks while I'm on holiday. If you do get a picture to us, you could win yourself a place on the Royston Social worth £250, but you need an item of clothing first, so yeah, have a look at that. Anyway, let's go back to my session on Grabbiers.
In session.
So I plan to do a blog every day. I haven't, because I've been so pissed off with the situation that we found ourselves in. We were warned prior to arriving at the lake. We were warned. We checked. I decided, knowing how paranoid Luke is about his fish, at the best of times, you always kind of get the impression that he doesn't really want you catching them. It feels like that. I'm not saying it is, but the lake is a bit of a big brother place. He's got a camera that follows you about, you know. It's on a 360 degree swivel. If you're out in the boat, he's watching you constantly from where he's in or not. because he can watch it all on his phone and stuff. Like, it's kind of always like that, but I knew that if the fish hadn't spawned, it would be an uncomfortable fishing experience. So a few days before we set off, I'd emailed, I asked my friend who'd made the booking to email Luke and find out if the fish had spawned or not, because I knew it would be an extremely uncomfortable fishing situation if they hadn't. And he did that. Luke rang him straight back and basically said they hadn't spawned, and we're going to have to kind of play it by ear with him, as opposed to, like, you know, restrictions on the lake and stuff. So we kind of knew before we got here there might be an issue, but he didn't say don't come or anything. So we arrived on the Saturday morning before we were due to arrive at the lake at midday. He was going away to England, so he rang us and basically put a load of restrictions in place before we've even set foot on the lake. Kind of thought at that point that is it worth going? Well, we're here anyway. We were staying in an hotel 5 minutes away, 10 minutes away from the lake. So it was like, well, let's go and look and see what the restrictions are. And when we got there, we basically weren't allowed to fish 4 rod lengths from the margins. Now, the way the lake is, the lake's got deep margins all the way round. Like, straight in the edge, it's like 5-6 foot, which is where all the spots are. It's all tree lined. That's where 90% of the fish come from. And as soon as you got a rod length off the margin, it's you know, you're into double figures almost, 10 foot plus. So by saying we're 4 metres away, four rod lengths away, it's actually a hell of a long way from where the fish want to be. It's just like you're basically fishing open water and all the fish are within a rod length of the bank. We started fishing under those conditions. Just suck it and see it. And the bailiff lad that's here was kind of saying, oh, you know, I'll ring Luke, I can see, because basically the weather's cool, there's no way the fish are going to spawn this week. It's down to 12 degrees every night and it's reaching low 20s in the daytime, you know, for average temperature of 30s through the summer. Like, it's cool for the time of year, and the weather's, it's just up and down, has been for the last few weeks. That's why the fish haven't spawned yet and why they're so late. But we keep getting dangled the carrot every day of, oh, we'll get the margins open for you tomorrow. Get the margins open for you tomorrow. It's now Tuesday, and we're still in that same situation. All of us are very unhappy. There's bickering between the three lads that are on it, because one of the lads is saying, oh, well, let's just fish. There's always that chance of a big one. But basically, we can see all the fish. 90% of the fish are up the far end of the lake from where we're allowed to fish, and we're not allowed to fish near these fish. He wants them left alone to spawn, which is fair enough. But we still have got to pay, you know, €3,000 for the trip. So it kind of feels like he wants his cake and eat it. He doesn't want to lose the money on the lake, but doesn't want us to fish anywhere near where these fish are. Bear in mind, these fish are not spawning fish. They're not even close to spawning. Yes, they're full. You know, they're going to be big weights, but they're nutting out. One of every 10 seconds we see a fish down there. Badoosh, badoosh. They're in a safe area of, you know, a good 10 acres of lake that nobody can get near. We're not allowed near, and it's just frustrating as hell. We've just tried to come to some sort of compromise with Luke today. Incidentally, I did catch a fish. There's a bay to the right of me, and there's been a group of about 15 fish. It's about the only fish I've seen that are not up the far end of the lake, in that top sort of few acres. It's basically the only fish we've seen, and there's a group of about 15 fish here. I sent a bay boat over to, like, the nearest place we're allowed to fish, because I'm fishing into the corner of a lake, which is kind of like a bay, and I've sent a rod over into the centre. Ended up catching the fish after 24 hours. I'd just left the rod out and it went, and it was a decent one. It was £58. Within minutes of catching it, we had Luke on the phone basically asking us why we're taking the piss. It wasn't taking the piss, you know, it was over 4 rod lengths from any bank, probably 6, maybe 7. He'd been watching on the camera, watched us land the fish, and straight away threatened to break my legs, which anybody who knows Luke will know that's the sort of thing he says a lot. And just basically put a dampener on the whole holiday. Like, we sat here, I mean, two of the lads didn't even put any rods out last night. We sat here thinking, what is the point of being here? We're not even enjoying it. The fishing's frustrating because we can't get near the fish, number one. Number two, I don't really want to catch something and get grief. This is not a fishing holiday, and yet, you know, he still wants to take pretty much the full money. He's just offered to knock €400 off the three, which is basically €400 he put the price up this year. It's always been 3,000, it's now €3,400 for a week. A week of Big Brother watching you. I'll let you know how this pans out. We're in negotiation today to decide if we're staying or not, but we're in the position where one of the lads is just happy to stay and, you know, just not fish for the fish on the off chance that he might catch something, and it'll be big. But the rest of us are just saying, what are we doing here? Why are we still here now? And that's the current situation. It's now Wednesday lunchtime. Situation is still pretty similar in the fact that 90% of the lake stock is up the far end of the lake, and we're not allowed to fish up there. On the slightly brighter side, we are allowed to fish the margins up our end of the lake, which we weren't before, and there is odd fish cruising about. Like I say, they're showing two at a time every 10 seconds down the other end of the lake. That's where most of them are. But the scarfish is up on my margin. We saw it yesterday on the other side of the lake near Reedy and Spenny's spots. And it's turned up down my right-hand margin, not very far out. There's a couple of other fish with it, smaller fish, but it's definitely the scar. I've got a bit of video of it, which I'll put up at some point. But I've managed to get a bait boat and get a spot. I've just dropped a bait 6 foot away from where it's sitting in the weed. So I'm about as close as I'm ever likely to be to a near 100 pound fish. It's just sat there not doing much at the minute, but yesterday and stuff it was definitely feeding. We have seen it feed a couple of times. So it's game on. We might be able to salvage a frustrating session at some point.
In session. So as you can see, the scarfish is actually in my margin. I've got the only group of fish near me. There's about 15 fish that are near me on the right hand side of this point that we're fishing. The other two lads have got fish nowhere near them. And one of the fish that's near me is the bloody big one. It's the scarfish. Now, on a previous trip, I'd seen it hanging on that same margin, and I'd seen it on the other side of the lake near Reedy and Spenny's, near Reedy's spot. And it did the same thing on a trip 2 years ago. It was like kept going from one side of the lake to the other, just two spots. So with like the promise of they're going to open the margins. And what happened is, as I just said on that blog, is on the Wednesday, they opened the margins on our end of the lake where basically there's hardly any fish. It did make us all feel a bit better because the fish that are in my margin, I can now fish for them, including the scarfish that's there. We're still not happy, and 80% of the stock of the lake is still up the safe end where we aren't allowed anywhere near margins or open water. We'd asked a few times, can we just go and fish in the other peg, and we'll just fish the open water straight in front of the peg, because the fish were not in there one after the other and we weren't allowed to. So we're still pretty pissed off, but the situation is slightly better. The following day, the scarfish returned on my margin. This is Thursday, I think it is. And then it vanished. What I should have known is, as you'll hear from the first blog entry of the in session, I picked the right hand side of that peg because of seeing the scar there that 2 years before. As I said at the start, I don't think I was going to catch many fish, but there is definitely a chance of the big one. Well, because I had 15 fish in my right hand margin, I actually gave that spot up to Reedy, who was in the middle, had no fish anywhere near him. I gave him the what we call the house spot, which is a spot near the house where I'd seen the scar on the previous year and where we'd seen it on the Wednesday this week. Anyway, Reedy caught it off that spot after I'd given my swim away. Reedy caught it all fair and square, you know, fished well and snagged the fish at 92.5 pound, which changes everything on its head. We've had an absolutely shit trip and a really horrible trip. But Reedy's just caught a fish that's been the world record. Let's let Reedy tell you about this. Is that my man Reedy?
What's your name, boss?
What's your name, boss? Reedy.
Reedy.
So, the full story of an extremely large fish. I've just had my Carp Talk email actually for this week's news, and it says our top story this week comes from the Graviers in France, where Nick Reedy Maddox has landed the Scarred Mirror at 92.5 pounds. I happen to know this because I was there. I witnessed it. How you feeling? Have you still got the buzz?
Yeah, just a bit, mate. It's every time it sort of feels like it's just about sunk in. It's feels like it's sunk in, and then you speak to somebody else that says, "Yeah, well done on it. They've heard about it," and it's like, "Oh, actually, no, it's not quite sunk in just yet." When you realise there's not many bigger out there to go and sort of target now, so it's like, yeah, you feel a little bit lost, to be honest.
So I told Boise, who for our listeners that don't know, Boise is a guy who does helps with the sound and light and stuff on the Northern Angling Show. Told him about your capture yesterday, and his first thing he said, which a number of people have said, is, "How on earth did he lift it up?" Quite a few people have said that. It's a tough one, wasn't it?
I don't think there was too much lifting it up. It's more sort of sit behind it and just hope that the lads on the camera do a good job, and yeah, they did. But an impressive fish, certainly. Just blows you away when you see something like that in front of you. Well, you know it, so it's a bit of a mad one.
I saw that fish in the edge on my first ever trip to the lake, and it blew me away then. As you know, we saw it in the margins two or three occasions before it actually got itself caught. It's just a ridiculous sized fish, isn't it? It's not normal.
That's the only thing that you can say. It is just ridiculous. You see big carp over here, or you see big carp anywhere, and you just sort of like, oh yeah, it's a decent one, but that is, you can't put anything else that's like it that you've ever seen. Well, certainly I can't anyway. So it's, you know, it was it's an impressive fish to see, as you say. So,
and do you think you're ever going to beat your PB?
I think it's probably highly unlikely now, but you know, never say never, I guess. It's you can see what's happening across Europe now. Fish are getting bigger, and there's big ones coming out sort of more and more places now. So yeah, still got a few years left in the year, I guess. So you never know, I might catch a bigger one, but yeah, I can't see it happening in the very near future, if I'm honest.
Tell us how you caught it. I watched you tying rigs. Your exact words were, before you put that rod out, was I'm making up two classic big fish rigs.
Mega simple, really, as I like to say. Just nothing. I don't know why. I just think the more simple it seems to be, it's just a bit more crude. It's just like your typical big fish rig. So just like about, I'd say probably 12 inch or so of just Nashi armor link, and then just a simple knotless knot, one of the little hook kickers on the over the eye, bit of tubing on the bottom of the shank on a sort of big, decent size 5 twister. And that was it. Nice long hair, 20mm bottom bait with a little 15mm pop-up, just fish snowman style, and that was it. Just nothing sort of, nothing special, nothing sort of finicky or anything sort of difficult to tie. Yeah, just bog standard hair rig, really, and yeah, it worked. Sort of, well, it worked for the two fish that I had that week, really. Sort of fished very similar tactics throughout the whole week. And yeah, I don't know why, I just think then sort of bigger scale, just scale everything up, and it seems like it's a bit more of a crude rig, but it worked.
Yeah, you were laughing at my rigs. I had like a 7 or 8 inch rig out, probably similar sort of length to what you'd use for normal fishing.
You ain't catching
and you're
nothing on them.
You ain't catching nothing on them. That was your exact words. Just a big, for those that don't know, the armor link is, it's just braid, isn't it? It's quite a coarse, super tough, strong braid that Nash have done for years.
That's it.
And years.
In fairness, I'd probably, like, in most cases, sort of, especially if I'm casting, and it's like I would probably fish more like yourself with a shorter link with a bag that sort of keeps the rig yes, it just keeps it from tangling. But obviously over there, I knew that you're dropping from the boat, you've got less chance of it tangling. Well, you've got no chance really of it tangling, because you can watch the lead swing down and stuff like that. But that's why I thought I can go get away with the longer lengths of the arm link and just sort of, that was sort of part of the reason behind using that hook link. But yeah, it's I think it's definitely the longer rigs certainly out there seem to do well. So.
And we forget, but you actually had a fish of a lifetime for most people before you caught the fish of a lifetime for anybody. And you had
a fish of a lifetime for me at the time. It was like, yeah, mind blowing.
Yeah, you had a 68-pounder the day before, was it? Was it the day before?
On the Wednesday I had that. So, yeah, Wednesday out of the blue, weren't it? It was sort of, last thing we were expecting really at the time. Sort of just gone, well, about 11 o'clock ish, weren't it? Just had the barbecue and some food, a couple of beers, and then, yeah, just out of nowhere. So,
Because it wasn't like
there was mega as well. Like.
Yeah, there was no fish up our end really, was there? It was just... You know, there was nothing. We were just about to retire, weren't we? Go to bed pretty wasted after a few beers and whatever. And it sprung into life with your Nick Reedy Maddox patented elasticated hangers.
They do work. And to be honest, I've got to give some of the credit to my old man there. We both come up with it the last time we went. But yeah, for fishing at range, they just they do the trick, don't they?
Yeah, so basically, if people that don't know, you're just tying a bit of elastic to the bottom of your bobbin and pinning it to the ground, which I think kind of works better than like the Springer arms and anything else I've seen similarly. It's very specific use, kind of long range fishing, especially.
Long range locked up and sort of, fishing for finicky bites where, you just need it to literally, as you say, that tension that the line's kept under, it just sort of ends, it just gives you extra movement, whereas normally at that range it's, you ain't got much movement in the line. So no, it does certainly probably registered a few bites that I wouldn't have got maybe.
Yeah, without doubt. It's I think it's more key on kind of the drop back angles, which are, it's the most common type of bite when you're fishing at range, I guess.
Certainly up against the far margin there, they've not really got much of a choice. They're either going left or right, so they're kiting or they're swimming towards you and dropping back, so...
Yeah, so a bobbin under super tension. We'll say here now the patents have been applied for. Carpcast bobbins will be out at some point in the future. I hope you spoke to Alan about this before this goes out, because these bobbins
I've not spoken to him yet.
unlucky. So yeah, you had that 68 pounder, which was the most, it's the biggest fish I'd ever seen on the bank in flesh, up until obviously you caught the scarfish, and that again was just a ridiculously large size frame. Well, it wasn't really
that, we didn't know what it was, did we? It was sort of, again, that just blows you away seeing something that size. It was unbelievable really, to be honest.
And then you caught one 20 pound bigger. Nice.
That's really, why not?
Yeah, there's so much I wish we could say right now on this. I mean, I've gone into more detail a minute ago about the kind of whole trip, and I guess you don't want to be dragged into all that, Mr. Diplomatic Nick, who cannot do anything but smile at that trip with a ridiculously large carp.
That's it, mate. That's the one.
Well, congratulations. I wish it was me, obviously, but it wasn't. It was you. Sickness. And I will see you in the dam in 2 weeks'
brilliant
time.
Thank you, mate. I look forward to seeing you there, mate.
So, understandably, we've got one happy camper now in the group. Reedy had actually caught one other fish, like, right out of the blue, as he's just said, which is still a pretty crap week. And still very frustrating, because the majority of the fish in the lake are still in this safe haven that nobody can go near. We're still in the position of, I've got Luke coming back on the Thursday, still don't know what his attitude's going to be. You know, I'm apprehensive about this guy that, has told us many fighting stories over the years, and I'm still sat there with this cloud over me that he's going to come round and, make a horrible session even worse. I don't want to be rolling in the gore in the lake with somebody if I can possibly help it. I get too old for that stuff now. But As it turns out, Luke had literally just arrived on the lake. He'd got there late at night. And the first time we saw Luke was when Reedy shouted Scarfish out from the boat. You know, when he'd been... The bite was at 6 a.m. I was in bed. Spenny was stood by my bivvy. And as soon as I said to Spenny, which rod is it that's ripped? Because I couldn't see. As soon as he said the house rod, I'm like, it's the Scarfish. Reedy's not even got out there in the boat at this point. I knew it was the Scarfish because I knew that... If you caught one bite off that spot, it was going to be that fish. I'd learned that from a previous session. The Scarfish was on my margin. It had vanished. So I knew it had gone back to that other side because I'd seen it do that before. And I knew it was the Scarfish. Reedy's landed it. It was the Scarfish. And then obviously Luke's heard him shout, Scar, because he's actually in a boat right by Luke's house where he's sleeping. And Luke's come round 6 a.m. to do the photos and everything. The fish, ironically, the fish weighed 92.5 pounds, which is its spawned out weight. Now, the 58 that I caught was carrying spawn. The 68 that Reedy caught was carrying spawn. So the fish hadn't spawned, or certainly the bulk of them hadn't spawned, but the Scarfish clearly had. Which put Luke's mind at rest about spawning, because I mean, at the end of the day, that's the fish that makes him £3,500 a week. It's literally that fish, because the rest of the stock is like dozens and dozens of other lakes in France where you can pay £300-400 a week to fish each. So you know, he's a bit more relaxed. We carried on with our session. When we came to pay the balance of the money at the end of the week, we gave him the money, didn't try and knock him or anything. And then it came up in conversation about the situation that we had. Me being outspoken and opinionated, kind of said, you know, I understand you're protective. I know, you know, I know what type of a person you are. We haven't took the piss, but this is a little bit out of order. You want your cake and eat it. You want the full money. You want to protect, you basically don't want us to fish for your fish. You know, you want to protect the fish. And he came out with it. He came out with the statement, so, oh, that's right, isn't it? So everybody would like to hear Jamie Clossick wants to fish for spawning fish. I'm like, whoa, you hang on a minute. I don't want to fish for spawning fish any more than you want me fishing for spawning fish. I just don't want to pay €3,400 for a product that I'm not getting. You know, we would have, if you'd have told us the situation on Saturday morning, that all the fish are at one end, they have been for 4 weeks, and you're not allowed anywhere near them, we wouldn't be here now. Oh, well, Nick's had a result, hasn't he? Nick's had the big one. That's what you came for, one of you to catch the big one. I'm like, so if we caught nothing, would you give us all the money back? Of course you wouldn't. It shouldn't be about what we caught. At the end of the day, we had four fish between three people in 7 nights fishing in a lake that's got 250-300 carp in. It was crap. The fact that the fish caught were 48, 58, 68 and 92, and neither here nor there. You know, the results aren't what's important here. What's important is that you basically want your cake and eat it. I'm like, why don't you just shut the lake when it's like this? If you don't want anyone anywhere near your fish, you don't want the fish dispersed because you want them to spawn so that they're all healthy and fine, why not just shut the lake? Oh, well, I used to shut the lake, and you know, we ended up in a year like this, they didn't spawn for 4 weeks in a row. I lost 4 weeks money, and then they spawned 2 weeks after I opened the lake up again. So it's pointless. I'm like, right, so instead of losing the money, you don't really want anyone fishing for your fish, but you don't want to lose the money. So you've come up with a way of protecting your fish, i.e. not letting the anglers anywhere near him, but still taking the full whack, which I think is out of order. Anyway, his answer to that was, I don't like your attitude, you're banned. These two can come back, you can't. I'm like, listen, mate, we ain't coming back anyway. You know, this is a joke. Argument. I've ranted on enough about this.
Jimmy's rant!
It was a horrible experience. It was nice seeing my friend catch a completely massive carp. It could have been any one of us. But it was a horrible holiday. A very horrible. And I knew that was the risk. Going to Luke Moffat's Graviers, that is the risk, that you're going to fall out with him. And it ain't hard to fall out with him. It's also the most expensive lake in France. Even Telliot's, you know, is, which is probably one of the dearest lakes in France, especially if we take the whole lake, because it's like 35 acres or something. And but it's got a lot of pegs, but it's still only £600 a person. I mean, the cheapest possible way, you know, we paid €3,400 between three people. You can technically put five on there, but two of them are wasting the time. You know, it's three people or four people at a push is the maximum. So, you know, it's the cheapest you can possibly do that lake for is 800 or 900 nicker each. It's the dearest lake in France, and he wants his cake and eat it. You're fishing under his terms. I used to think the rules were pretty fair. He's only going to get worse. My advice, save your dough. There's more enjoyable holidays to be had if you really just want to catch a 90-pounder. It's probably similar to the stories we've heard about Euro Aqua. You know, like, you know, catching fish that size comes with a price. And it's a very high price financially and possibly a high price on the enjoyment value. And my advice is stay away from graviers. If anybody else has had similar experiences, I'd like to hear them, because I've heard these stories in the past, and I've just thought, yeah, well, Luke's that type of character, you know, love him or hate him, he's pretty fair, and, you know, just don't rub him up the wrong way. As long as you're not an idiot, you're probably not going to rub him up the wrong way. Well, I'm not an idiot, and we fell out to the point of he's banned me, like, for having an opinion about the fact that he's fucking out of order. And then had the cheat to try and, like, because he was, you know, it's an argument he can never win. His only thing he can come up with is, oh, I'm going to tell people Jamie Closet wanted to fish for spawning fish. I'm like, firstly, you can't weren't spawning. Not even close to spawning. It was 12 degrees every night. They were not spawning fish. They were some of the happiest carp I've ever seen. You know, when you walked up that other end, they're feeding in the edges, their tails are, you know, 50, 60 pounders waving their tails out at you. They were just actively looking for food. They weren't, you know, chasing each other about, nuzzling up together, all the stuff that's, we all know what spawning fish do. And he just didn't trust us to fish. And then if the fish started spawning, just reel in, which we would have done for 24 hours. You know, we'd have just reeled in without even him having to ask us to. But anyway, I don't know. Have you got any opinions on what I've just said?
Yeah, I don't think I'll be booking a trip anytime soon going by that tail. It was desirable as a fish that, you know, that size. But, I mean, Reedy, you know, it's a great capture for him. He's not a massive fella. How much does he weigh?
He weighs 5 kilos more than the fish did. they weighed him. Yeah, they weighed him. I mean, Reedy's had a fantastic session. He kind of felt like when we were having the heated debate at the end before we left, he kind of felt like he couldn't say anything because obviously he's had a fucking brilliant solid result, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Even though, you know, he was the one at the start saying, let's not even set up. On Saturday morning when Luke rang us and put the restrictions in place before we'd even set foot on the lake, he was like, this is going to be a joke. And it was. You know, a few days into the trip, we were like, you know, we were planning exits. We were planning the Brexit, you know, to get out of to get out of France as fast as we could, or certainly to get out of that lake. And, mate, it was a horrible experience. And it would have been softened if he'd have gone, lads, I know this hasn't been ideal. I know that, an angler wants to fish. I don't care if I blank, as long as I feel like I'm fishing. Not only that, if he'd have said to us, right, lads, you know, you can get first booking next year, you can get first choice next year, I'm going to knock €1,000 off, but just do what I ask you, please. Stay away from the margin, stay away from them fish. At least we would have had the choice to go, do you know what, that's pretty fair. I hope they spawn so that you can open the whole lake back up again. I hope they spawn, but I understand you're protecting your fish, and listen, you've given us €1,000 back. We're here now, we might as well go through a bit. At least we've got a choice. But to want to have to protect your fish, to keep us away from them, he didn't want us even walking around there to because he didn't want the fish dispersing. He wanted them, they're all at one end. I mean, they weren't at one end packed in a group nuzzling each other getting ready to spawn. They were up there because it was safe as houses up there, and you know, they're completely unpressured. There's no lines out, no nothing. And you know, I've seen it on that lake before, like on a normal week, you know, in autumn, if people fish on the point swim, which is the most popular peg, cause it does most of the fish, if there's groups of twos and threes only fishing the point and no one fishing up the other end, any time of year the fish just go up the other end till somebody fish for him. As soon as you go up there, catch three or four fish, they'll be gone back up the other end again as soon as they realise they're being fished for. If they don't realise they're being fished for, they're just going to stay there, as they had been for 4 weeks apparently before we got there. If we'd have known that situation, we wouldn't have set foot on the lake. We'd have saved ourselves €1,900 and gone to because we'd already paid a 1,500 deposit, we'd have saved ourselves the €1,900 and gone to another lake. and at least had an enjoyable time. And he had the cheek to say, well, you should be enjoying yourself anyway. You're in France, you know, with a few mates. You can have beers and barbecues. I'm like, I can pay for $3,500. I can sit in Ibiza with me three mates and a pile of cocaine and some hookers. Do you know what I mean? for the same price and have fun with my mates. You know, I'm not going to camp in the field. I'm not going to camp in the field and look at a load of carp that are feeding, really happy, want to get caught on a lake where there's just zero chance of them spawning because, you know, it's cool. It was not spawning weather. There was rain. You know, it's 12 and 30. The warmest it was any night was 13 degrees and it got to low 20s in the daytime. It's very cold for the middle to south of France at that time of year. But anyway, I've gone on long enough. Jamie's rant should have a time limit on it, but this is something I had to get off my chest because it costs us a lot of money. You know, there's another €1,000 spent on top of the late cost just in travelling, food, and well, a bit more actually. It was an extremely expensive, and all he had to do was say, listen, I'm knocking €1,000 off, lads. Don't take the piss, stick to what I've told you, and I'll give you a decent week next year. That's all he had to do. For somebody who's kind of defended him in the past, gone, yeah, he's a funny guy, you know, and he's all right. I understand lots of people who have had run-ins with him, but I think he's pretty fair. I was a defender of him. I'll tell you, one of the I should speak to Rob Hughes about this actually, but one of the things that he threw at us, basically questioning the money thing, he closed off one of the bays off the point last year, which because they didn't, he normally rakes all the weed. He's so paranoid about his fish, he's not an ounce of weed in the lake, there's not a single snag, there's overhanging trees, but everything's cut away underneath. It's a really nice lake to fish, don't get me wrong, there's some big fish in there. It's gin clear water, he dyes it to stop the weed growing, and then he's got this like diesel weed cutter that he drags around from a boat. You know, any weed bed pops up, he hacks it down straight away because he just doesn't want people losing fish. He hates weed because he doesn't want, I mean, he's got some silly things, you know, he doesn't like using leads over 3.5 ounce in case, you know, a lead lands on a fish's head when you cast in. He doesn't even like your casting in, wants you to drop from boats or bait boats, just be, that's how protective he is of his fish. He doesn't want you casting in case you hit one with a 4 ounce lead. He doesn't want that. I mean, come on, that kind of tells you how paranoid he is. He's got loads of stupid little things like that. But again, you know, I don't want to cast when you can drop from a boat. You know, he provides these big boats. You've got your electric motors that you take with you and your batteries, and it's a nice way of fishing. He didn't get onto the weed for a few weeks last year. They left it. I think the bailiff said he left it as a bit of an experiment, which is where all the fish sit in, you know, in the summer up the up the shallower end off the point where we were fishing. He basically, it got too weedy, so he closed the bait off because he closed the bait off because he didn't want any fish getting lost in the weed around there, and the weed had took over. Rob Hughes was booked on for a trip. I need to confirm this with Rob. This is what the bailiff told us there, and he told us. He was basically using this as a threat to us that if you don't pay or if you don't fish, then you ain't coming back. So he basically told us that Rob Hughes had a session booked. He paid his $1,500 deposit. He had the balance to pay another $1,500 before the price went up on the week. Rob heard that he shut the bay off and all the fish were just sat in this safe area in the bay. Rob rang him up to see if that was true. And this is him telling us this, by the way. He told him it was roped off and you couldn't go near there. Rob said, right, I don't fancy it then. I'm not coming. Fair enough. Rob didn't go. Rob tried to book again the following year, and he basically said, you owe me $1,500, Nicker, for not turning up last year, even though he'd told him. He said, and basically, you ain't coming back unless you give me that £1,500. And he was using that story. I mean, I don't know if that story is true. I'd like to check it with Rob, but he's using that towards to basically say that if you don't pay all your money for this trip, you ain't coming back without giving me the money. He wants his cake and eat it. And if the milk turns out to be sour, I ain't the kind of pussy to drink it. And I made my feelings known and got banned. That's the end of that. My advice, don't go there. There are many other lakes in France for a fraction of the price where you're going to enjoy yourself because it's Big Brother, you know, and it's literally Big Brother because of the cameras and sensors and God knows what he's got all around the place. You are watching. If you want to pull one off in your... if you've been seeing all those videos of Beverly Clifford doing press-ups every single day, then I would strongly advise not to relieve yourself on his lake because you're being watched.
It's on the net. It must be true.
And I touched on it very, very briefly then. Something we have seen on the net, and yes, I did go there, is Beverly Clifford's soft porn press-ups. I'm not speaking out of turn because I've lost count of the amount of people that have gone, oh my God, have you seen that? That's one for the Bankside mental material. It's all in aid of a good cause. First of all, let's get the good stuff out of the way. It's for awareness.
Awareness of PTSD in soldiers, I believe.
Yes, it is. 22 press-ups for 22 days. I've seen people tagging other people in and roping them in to do it. Don't rope me in because I've got a broken shoulder from many years ago and I can't even do 2 press-ups because I collapse to the floor with no inner core body strength on my shoulder. Well, it's my shoulder, my collarbone. But yeah, I've seen Rob Hughes has been doing it. Beverly's been doing it every day, and it is very enjoyable to watch. And I've heard many people say exactly the same thing. So yeah, big shout out to Beverly. Looking mighty fine, Bev.
What about Rob? He's a handsome chap. Is he good to watch?
Yeah, I'm sure there's some carp anglers out there that are of that persuasion. I'll stick to watching the ladies.
I've seen loads of pictures of you on the Carpcast page, and like the fish are either flapping, you're in a bit of a mess, Jaffa cakes, screaming and that. You know, everything but carp. Whilst I don't doubt your ability to catch carp because your track record goes before you, I like the fact that you're now into catching bream.
I'm not into catching bream. No, bream, bream are the bane of my life, and which is why I'm looking forward to the folly because there isn't a single one in there apparently. I'll find one if there is.
You'll find one. I was just about to say, well, I'm looking forward to fishing with you later on this year. And I know that if you're on the lake when I am, which you probably will be, I won't be able to catch any bream because you will have caught them all.
I'll put them back in your swim.
Yeah, but they still swim off and catch you. You catch them again. You know that.
Yeah. There's one thing we like. I had a tench last year. And I sent a text to Martin Bailiff. It's the first tench he's heard of for 4 or 5 years. It's 200 acres. There's probably about half a dozen tench, and I caught one.
Jesus Christ. Have you ever thought about going into the Grand Cup?
I have.
you could win it without even... You could be the only carp angler that fishes specifically to try and catch carp, but catches everything else.
Yeah. So I fished... I'd have gone... little syndicate up here called Mesters the other year. You're catching really massive rudd on 50mm pop-ups.
Mm.
Which is, more like roach rudd hybrids than, true rudd. Well, even they would be pain in the arse.
Yeah, it's not good, is it, when you've got all sorts of other species. We're just about to start talk to the farmer about he's got this lake that we used to fish back in the mid-80s when we first started carp fishing.
Yeah.
And he's basically got a club that have been on there ever since. They've had it for years and years and years. You have to drive through the farm, and now there's like 100 members in this club.
Mm.
And he's getting proper pissed off. Well, he's pissed off the fact that they've got 5 months of that and he's not allowing them to review their lease. So a mate of mine put us in touch with him, and we've got to go up this week to... it's only about 2 acres, the lake. Yeah. You know, you get like a 10-man syndicate, and... It's a total match club, completely full of everything, really, other than carp.
Yeah.
So but the lake's very mature, very nice, and you know it'd be nice to sort of do something around here for just a group of you, like-minded lads. You all put the money because it will need netting, and you have to buy fish and buy food to grow them on. But like a project, you know, for sort of 5, 6, 7, 8 years down the line, but it's all going to hinge on what the farmer wants. For this lake, and I think he's probably likely to take a similar amount on the basis that there would only be 10 anglers that would have access to go on the lake.
Yeah, he's going to have a lot less stress of people ploughing through his land as well.
That's where it is, Mark. Yeah, he's totally had enough of suppose, the match guys or the people that go, they're just up there, they're not really respecting his land, they're driving too quick through the farm, and he's just had enough of them, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I can certainly understand that. I mean, there's, every now and then, you know, you have a look on Google Earth, and, you know, you find these little ponds, and a couple of years back, there's me and a mate called Big Chris. He's, I'll tell you a story about Big Chris, and all he's a proper, you'll like it as well. But we found these lakes, they had a big sign up at the front where Savills, they were all for sale. So we thought, we had a look around, there's two lakes, you know, the proper, you know, gravel pits, you know, you could see bars with like the old petrified trees sticking above them, proper, you know, look like they'd, you know, been dug a while back, because, you know, more recent pits are just bowls, but if they'd been dug a long time before the technology to rip the arse out of the lake was all there.
Yeah, yeah.
And anyway, we made it inquiry with Savills, and literally they just sold. And now there's one of the lakes is a carp syndicate, one's a trout fishery, and there's two other small lakes at the back of it. It's turned into little commercials full of baby carp. But the fellow who's got it, he's not a fisherman, he's a businessman, he just wants money out of it. And well, it's a shame, really, because I think it's ruined. You know, I like the fellow who's got running the carp fishing for him, but the fellow who owned it, it pissed a lot of people off pretty quick, because he stocked it, left it for a while while he worked on other lakes and got his trout lake up and running. And he's telling people he didn't put anything under £20 in, and he had a couple of people test fishing it and they didn't catch anything over £20. Most of it nearer 10.
Oh, God. But, It's I'm sure. When he mentioned it to me, Dave, my mate, I thought dismissed it, and I said, no, it can't. But the more I've thought about it, it could be totally. We went for something a couple of years ago out towards Shropshire, and the farmer backed off because he'd had a syndicate on there before, and he sort of, you know, they hadn't been strictly well behaved, and I think he was a bit put off. And you know what farmers are like, they don't need the money.
Yeah.
So you're never going to bribe them, but because there's only a ceiling figure that a lake of probably 2 to 4 acres is worth as on a lease. Because you're not going to get to them by saying, because it's not worth $3,000-$4,000 a year to a syndicate, not a small syndicate, to nurture it on, you know what I mean? But so it sort of fell through, because we weren't going to go, well, we'll give you $5,000-$8,000, you know, whatever it may be, because it just wouldn't have been, we didn't want it that much, you know. We've got a distinct lack, we've got a lot of day ticket waters around Shropshire, or within an hour of us in Soak. But there's no real syndicates as such. And if it comes off, we've sort of got a plan together, you know, we get it netty, we buy some fish, but everybody would put in. There'd be nobody that runs it, you would all run it equally.
Yeah.
So, obviously, if the lease is £1,500 a year, well, that's £150 each for the lease. And then if we need fish, however many you want to buy, whatever size, if you know, say you've got to chuck ten grand off it, it's £1,000 each. So the incentive is that you haven't got shares in the place, but the incentive is to stay in for however long it takes to reach its peak or to get it to where you want it to be. Because if you drop out, you've lost however much money you've put into the project so far. There's a place like that, the Cotswolds, that I know that Mark Bryant has something to do with, and they've done it, and now it's becoming sort of something really special. The guys haven't fished it much because the fish are small, but they've been left to grow naturally. I think they have been feeding them. Much bigger lake, obviously. I think Tom Banks has something to do with it as well.
Yeah.
But you will not be able to get a ticket on that place for years and years and years, because all the people aren't, just, you know, they're not dropping the tickets, because now it's coming to something special. It's actually flourished into what they wanted it to be. And as long as it wouldn't consume too much of my time, because I am so obsessive about things, and everything's got to be a certain way, you know, and I've got to sort of step back from if it comes off. So I'm quite excited, to be honest, because it's only local, and it would be just a group of lads that are all mates, just watching, hopefully, something becoming quite special for the years to come.
Yeah, definitely. I remember hearing about Sam Eriks when he just got this lake, and you know, I remember what I was hearing. He's just put a load of small fish in, and you know, the lake was pretty barren, which, you know, I believe it's still not exactly picturesque. But Remember, the story I got told was he'd put a load of these small fish in, you know, singles, you know, low doubles, and he'd got a handful of, you know, 20 pounders just to give people something to fish for in the meantime. These massive fish that are in there now were the ones he put in as singles and what have you. And not a massive amount of time ago now in the general scheme of things, so I don't know what the ceiling for those fish in that will be, but that started off as Sam's little, you know, project, so to speak, and well, look at it now.
I mean, I think there's no reason. I mean, I know people do buy big fish, whether it be 30-pounders or, but they're so expensive. You know, the better thing, or I think the easier thing to do, because you get more for your money if you buy a lot of fish from 10 to 15 pounds, because you've yourself have heard some of the growth rates. If you feed them the right thing with, you know, pallet and cereal based product that full of protein, there's no reason why you can't get a 15-pounder to a 20-pounder in 12 months.
No, not at all.
It's quite easily done. And if you're not fishing for them, because, you know, the lads that you would have in the syndicate wouldn't necessarily be that bothered about it. So, you know, they'd want to fish, they'd want to catch them. But when they're probably bigger, it'd be nice to just watch it turn into something something special, really.
Yeah, I had this chat with Dave Moore when I, you know, recorded with him. I had a night with him on his lake, which that's an interesting place. Very very deep. Reminded me of old Pit 2, just like, you know, the colour of the water and, you know, the weed and the just looking at, you know, the fish swimming around and some real.
Yeah. I listened to that interview. It was good. I enjoyed spent a bit of time with Dave at Euroaqua. And whilst I don't think Dave would mind me saying it, you know, he's got substantially more money than I have. So when money isn't an issue, but it does, I've heard a lot of people who are in that syndicate and they're in it now because for the same reason that in 5, 6, 7 years time, you will not be able to get in. You won't be able to get a ticket because people won't drop, because it is going to be, I think I'd probably, as a guest to say, it's probably going to be one of the best syndicates in the Midlands and in the North, without a doubt, you know, because he doesn't do things wrong, Dave, does he? He does everything correctly, and he's such a minefield of information.
Oh, without a doubt. And, you know, I wish I'd have left I wish I'd have recorded just about every conversation we had during that session, because it's what the knowledge he's coming out with. And I can't remember if he mentioned on the recording or not, but it was on about how, you know, angler pressure affects even fish that have not been fished for before. You know, and how they just, well, I think there is words, shit themselves. You know, because he says, you know, before it opened, he's watching his fish and they're almost feeding out his hand. He's thinking, my God, these fish will get hammered. And then there's a few more people around, let's start flying around, and it didn't happen. They went to ground.
Yeah, it doesn't take them long, does it?
No.
There's a lake about 5 miles from me. It's a beautiful place, Millbrook, it's called. It's a day ticket.
Yeah.
And it's about 4.5 acres, and there's 210 fish in there. Absolutely immaculate.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't, you know, one fish will come out on a session. And you would walk down and think, this is going to be a piece of piss. I'm going to absolutely batter this. There's no weed, there's no snags, nothing. And some of the fish he put in 3 years ago, because he keeps a record, as most fisheries do now when they get caught, they do pictures, and haven't even been landed, whether they've probably been lost. But, I mean, how did he do it? How did he suddenly become, not uncatchable, but they managed to accustom themselves to being probably left in the lake free, doing what they want. And I think within a very short space of time, they wise up and think, this is bad, this is, they're not going to do this because they're going to get a size 4 hook stuck in the mouth. I think people don't give them enough credit on small waters. I've fished a lot of small-ish waters. And they're amongst, you know, I've heard Jamie say, and you've said it a lot of times on the Carpcast, that big pit fishing, whilst the low stock value and the large expanse of water might frighten people, if you can find them, with exception to Jamie on Colmy, I suppose, you can catch them. They act naturally. But on small waters where they're a lot more well-stocked, you know, they act totally differently because I think they know that they're pressured all the time. You know, I mean, I don't buy all this crap about that they're super intelligent. I think they learn by association, definitely. And angling pressure I think everybody now realises that angling pressure is the key thing that will dictate if you catch or you blank.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's one thing, I've had a couple of conversations recently with, I had Scott Lloyd on podcast. He's gone on to Bergfield now. And, good mates, we had Betteridge, he was on a bit on there, and, I can't remember who I was listening to, someone else, anyway, they described them as basically, the big pit fish, because it's, a big old place, and, with a small water fish mentality once they get in them bays. Because they are so spooky.
Yeah. Which is weird, because it's a big old pit, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm just wondering if it's, the nature, because I've been, obviously, I've played around on Icom a lot, and it's just find them and you're going to catch them almost most of the time. Because, they're just pigs. They eat, and that's why I like it. I like mugs.
I think it's just, it's a different kind of mindset, isn't it? When you fish a big lake, I think if you would, you'd adapt and sort of tailor your approach and don't keep the casting down. I think you've got a different mindset when you're looking at 200 acres like Icom.
Yeah.
Your main focus is finding them. I think 100%. When you're fishing a small lake, your mindset has to be stealthy, keep the casting down, hope that somebody doesn't fish next to you. Don't try and fish opposite someone where they can affect your fishing. I think it's a totally different mindset. I really do. I think you've got to be able to adapt to both situations.
Yeah, that's what's kind of worrying me about when I get down from 200 acres to 6 acres.
I don't think I know Bertie gave them an absolute smashing where we're going.
Yeah.
Both on the bottom and the top. I don't think they're particularly hard fish to catch. I think they're a lot more tricky on the surface now.
Definitely.
Which is good, because I'm shit at it.
Yeah.
So, that'll be my excuse for probably not doing it.
Mine too.
But I am looking forward to it. We'll both have to make it, because we should have gone by now, because the ticket started a couple of weeks ago, but I'm busy with other stuff at the minute, so it's hard to get down, and I think they'll spawn by when I get my finger out my arse and decide I'm going to go. Because I'm like you, I haven't even seen the place. But I think when that time comes, which isn't long, I think they'll be spawning, because it's quite a deep lake in places.
Yeah.
So we'll both be regretting it.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get down there next week. Before we call this morning, I've just got my car booked in for a clutch transplant tomorrow, so it depends on funds. Because that's always painful.
That's costly.
Yeah, but I'm looking forward to it. It's totally different, a different challenge. And it's easy for, you get that clique sometimes who fishes one water year in, year out, and they can catch from that, but from in another situation, they haven't got a clue what to do. And I relish that challenge. Mm-hmm. I'm probably going to get laughed at by the fish, especially when they see me rigged with great big anchors for hooks and whatnot.
I think you'll fare, it's like riding a bike, and you never forget how to do it.
Yeah, you're going back to Doncaster women, aren't you? But
no comment.
I've got a few ideas, and I know I've been on other places where I've, when I first went on Pit 1 at Elstow, I thought I'm going to change things up here and do things different to the norm, and I caught absolutely nothing for quite a few nights, and then I started fishing like everyone else and started catching.
It's strange, isn't it? There's certain waters that they're asking for the mould to be broken, so you try and be different.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't. I remember Welly was a classic example, and when I did I remember doing a thinking tackle down there with Danny.
I remember. And
he came down with the particles, and yes, they were sort of ripping his spot about, they were on him, but he didn't catch anything.
Really?
And other people have tried it. A couple of Elstow lads, Ronnie, who was a very consistent angler. They tried the hemp and corn and three rods on one spot, and it just didn't work. The odd fish might have been caught on a bit of hemp with the boilies, but it was just out and out of boily water, and what an advert it is, 10 years later, and there's 20 odd 50s in there, they get fat eating boilies. It's a fact, isn't it? But some waters don't, you look at a water like surface, I can surface fish, I'm not great at it, but Millbrook is a classic example. They're all Mark Simmons fish, so you think they've been reared on pallet, they're all fed near the surface, and I went up to see a couple of pals who were on there the other week when it was warm, and they were using floaters. They even used the riser pallets, the Nashi riser pallets, which I haven't used, but you know, I know they're very, very good. I think they had one fish in about 3 hours take one of these pallets. And again, there's over 200 fish in this lake. And you think it looks absolutely perfect for floater fishing. And they just didn't respond to them. It's really strange, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, you know, one of the weirdest things I've seen with floater fishing, I'd go on, it's when 5-6 on the Wolfpack was, it closed it for a bit of spawning action. So it was me and Jane, we had a session that, well, we fished 7. And we both arrived in the same corner of the lake with his floater rods at the same time. You know, you couldn't have scripted it. So we thought, do we flip a coin? No, sorry, we'll both fish. But anyway, we got them going. But there'd obviously been old fish. They've been hammered off the top in the past quite a bit. And they were just very, very cagey. But what I found by accident, because I'd tied some, like, I don't know, some maybe tangerine-sized PVA bags of floaters up just so I could put them in the catapult and get them out further. Mm. And just with a look at it. And PVA would melt. It'd leave like a circle of mixers. And then one or two fish would come and absolutely smash them because it's in that tight grouping. But when they were spread out, just a normal catty spread, they were cagey, you know, where they'd come up, they'd maybe take one or just come up to one and then bolt off to the end of the lake.
Yeah,
I ended up catching one, a nice, I remember from memory, it's a 28-pound almost linear thing. But again, it was like a little size 10 hook and, you know, super silly fine line, and playing it for about 3 days because I was scared of breaking off.
I don't think we'll be giving any, that's why I never give tuition advice on floater fishing. I think you should do the same. I think we should leave it to the experts who are good at it, who've got a damn sight more patience than we have.
Yeah, I've not done tuitions for a year, so we just, you know, other stuff's just made me too busy. Mm. But, floater fishing has not really come up much. It's always, casting and, you know, control of the lead's always a main one.
I do a lot. I still do quite a few now. I do a sort of set formula, really, unless the client wants to do something completely different.
Yeah.
And I find that that formula works for 99.9% of people that book with me. And it's normally fishing in and around weed. So obviously I talk them through rigs that can do that. And I don't just talk them through it in time. I send them a list of products to buy before the tuition. I shouldn't give you this because this is probably something you'll do as well. I gave you pictures the other week, actually. And I work on the basis that they will watch me tie a rig, and then if they haven't got the components, they're not going to be able to tie them. So they're going to forget how to tie them and tie them correctly. So by having the stuff with, because they'd only go out after the tuition and buy the products and then, you know, sit at home and tie them and think, well, is that right? Because Ian hasn't seen it, blah, blah, blah. So they bring the stuff along and they watch me tie one, whether it be a choddy or a solid bag, which is what I show them, which is, you know, ideally weed rigs, really, if you're not specifically finding a spot. And then I sit there and watch them do it. And it's amazing. I get them to do 6. And after 2, they're tying them like they've never, ever done before. And it's just familiarity. And I find it works really well because I think it's just the fact that they trust my judgment that I'm watching them do it. And then they'll never ever forget how to tie a solid bag or a chod in their whole life again, because they've almost had somebody there that they trust to say that is absolutely bang on. Yeah. And little, really small things like tying a KD rig. So you've sort of whipped down, you've moved the hair, you've whipped under the hair, and I only found it years ago by accident. Now, if you look at that rig, holding it in front of your face, if you have the hair on the left-hand side of your hook link before you put it back through the eye, it will twist. When you're tying it down, it twists the whole knot left and your hook doesn't sit dead parallel with the rig. Now, it might not matter one bit, but you know what? I like them rigs to look straight and perfect. Now, if you've got the hook link on the right, once you tighten the knot down, everything is as straight as a ruler. and just little things like that, you know. And I demonstrate it to him, and I do it on the hair on the left, and I tie it down, and it looks untidy. It doesn't look level, it doesn't sit right, I don't think it sits right. And then you see the light bulb moment come on when they look at it, and that's what I mean when I talk to them about attention to detail. You know, it takes you equally as long a time to tie a shit rig that is unbalanced and doesn't look right and might not perform.
You'll be looking at my rig box.
The perfect one. Yeah, I'll be giving you tuition on the syndicate in a couple of weeks.
Oh, I might need it.
But the same with the casting. The casting is difficult because they've got to do it, and I just do it in stages.
Yeah.
So I look at the grip, I look at the technique, and then you work on that before you get them to slow and feel the lead down. And it might take a couple of hours, but they get it in the end, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the casting is the main thing. I think that is the most important bit of a tuition that I think people like to take, because they all want to cast for 150 yards. I'm like, well, you know, you need to learn to walk before you can run.
Yeah.
You need to be able to make sure you can cast straight, that it's going to land at your target. If there's a crosswind, it's going to land in the same spot. And it's really rewarding to see after 24 hours that they're so much more confident in what they're doing. It really, and that's the rewarding bit. And I always tell people on the phone, look, I can take you to waters where you'll catch 20 doubles in a day, but you're not really going to learn anything off that. You know, I'll take you to waters where there's a very good chance we'll blank. There's a very good chance you won't put the rods out until after tea time. And they're not bothered, because it's more, in my opinion, it's more about what they learn and take away with them to apply into their fishing when I'm not there than what they catch on the day. I think that's, I've always based my tuition on that for years, you know.
Yeah, anyway, I've been the same. I think, to be honest, the best part of the tuition is not, you know, during, but, you know, maybe a couple of weeks or a month afterwards, and you get a text message where they're holding up a great big fish. Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah.
100% correct, mate. Absolutely 100% correct. And it buzzes me up like you wouldn't believe, because you think, you know what? That's made what they've paid has made a difference to their fishing. So they've got out everything from that tuition that they wanted to, and it's really, really rewarding.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, it was kind of to do with want to pay tuition. It was just a day out with a lad called Josh. He's part of Ravenfield Club. He's part of their coaching scheme, and he wanted to do a bit of carping, so. Yeah, I took him out. We went to Ayfield Lakes, you know, they used to have the Fishermania, which is literally about 5 minutes from my house. So we just went out there, and wow. Have you ever been with someone who is just a natural? You know, the casting, the feathering, the trapping the line, the feeling the lead down. He's telling me what's on the bottom after 10 minutes of doing that.
Yeah.
All right. And he's a student of the game, so to speak, as well. He's been, you know, watching YouTube and everything, and I'm showing him rigs, and he's finished tying them before I have.
Yeah, I think the only thing that, this is only feedback that I get from customers, is that a lot of people watch and listen and read a lot of stuff, and I think there's a lot of confusion. So they get to a lake, and they're like, oh shit, well, what rig do I use? Because Ting Tong says Ting Tong uses this, or Ian Russell uses that, or Dal Pat uses this, or whatever. Well, nobody is wrong. I'm not wrong. Chemo's not wrong, and neither is Daryl. That's what works for us. But I think the general public try and take in all the information and store it, and they get to the lake and they think, right, oh God, what do I use now? Rather than sticking to a couple, three rigs that will catch him carp from any lake in the world, and they will catch him now or in 2 years' time. You know, so I think the modern day scene is very, very good, but also there's nothing like that sort of tuition feeling where you've got, it's almost like a live YouTube video where they might execute a cast, but you're there to say, well, no, that's not 100% correct. I think that's the general feeling I get from a lot of my clients. And I think Chemo is the same, and Adam and people like that, you know, who are busy with tuitions.
Yeah, I mean, the phrase I've used when I've had this whole same conversation with people is it's just a different direction to the same destination.
Yes, yeah, I'm going to nick that. I'm going to start using that on my business card.
Yeah, but yeah, I haven't had had a lad, I can't remember his name now, but he's a cracky lad. He caught a few as well. Went on pit five of the A1s, which is, it can be a tricky water.
Yeah.
you know, if I was shown him, you know, simple rigs and, well, I'll tell you exactly how I've done it with him. Because, I mean, at the time I was with Nash and, you know, they were very good to me with terminal tackle, so they were all provided. And, you know, I'd show him the rig, I'd have him, we'd kind of like be opposite each other and have him time one at the same time, kind of mirroring what I was doing, comparing results and then, you know, time all what we needed. And after we've done that, you know, because, I mean, I only put my rods out, to, you know, if it's overnight, I might, you know, chuck them out in the next swim or something. I'm not there to fish, I'm there to, you know, pass a bit of knowledge on. And
yeah, of course.
As it's on dusk, you know, he's walked into my swim with a brew. I've got my rods just on the buzzers with, you know, rigs hooked up on the eyes, and the rigs I've shown him are that simple. He's looking at my rigs to see if I've not been bullshitting him. See if I'm actually using rigs that simple.
Yeah,
they
do that, don't they? They think they look in, they open my rig box, and I think, and I just specifically let them sort of go through my tackle box and go through my rig box and my choddy bins, and just to see that I'm not bullshitting. That what I'm trying to show you, I'm not using something completely different. And I don't. I'm a very simple angler. I like to keep things simple. And I still pick tips up now. And I've even picked things up from tuition clients. And I think, and I don't change a lot of what I do. But if I see something or I see a product that I think, well, that's going to be better for me for what I do, I'm straight on it. I'm not too stubborn or pig-headed to sort of take on board, well, that's a better way of doing it than I'm doing it now. But I don't buy into certain rigs or certain fashions just because it's fashion. You know, I like something that functions and that works and that I'm confident in. So when I get to the lake, I kind of think, well, all I've got to do is find some carp. I kind of eliminate all the bullshit, if you like, of the modern thing, the modern industry, if that's what it's called. And if you think about it simply, you know, that is all that's the hardest thing to do. If you can get on them and put a rig on them that doesn't tangle and that is quite effective, that's half the battle. You know, if they move, then if you can move with them, that is another battle itself because of the busyness of a lot of lakes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's, when I was there talking about rigs, there's one thing I'm trying to remember this because it is a while since I've done it. I used to have it all like written down and I was so organised at one stage in my life and then I went back to normal. But, you know, well, yeah, this guy, you know, your rigs, your full all-end tackle setup is literally four things to get right, and that is it. And your first one is it's got to get you out there, which is, you know, your lead setup, be it a helicopter or lead clip or running rig, whatever. Number two, it's got to present the hook bait so it's available to the fish.
Yeah.
You know, which is, you know, so it can come, so it can suck it up and what have you, you know, if you... a solid bag if you or choddy if you're fishing in weed or whatever the situation is. And number three, it's got to hook the sod when it sucks it in.
Hook.
And then, you know, the last one, it's simply, it's got to be strong enough to wind the buggers in.
I think if you analyse it like that, it isn't that technical, is it? I think there's a lot of other obstacles that get thrown in the way. Whether it's one being obviously angling pressure, two baiting situations where I think there'll be other bait around the swim that's been left by other anglers, obviously stocking levels, weather conditions, I think is another one. Oh, somebody's trying to ring me, shut up. So if you know, it's just, I think certainly for my own fishing now, I try and pick syndicates that are less busy, because more and more people now are fishing in the week, which is obviously when I fish. And I do sympathise with the weekend lads that work 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, because they've got it more tricky. And I've always said that I think a midweek angler or a consistent midweek angler should catch more than a weekend angler. But on certain lakes I've fished over the last couple of 3 years, that isn't always the case, because now you've got people fishing more in the week, whether it's shift work or the book holidays and things like that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people now, especially with shift work, it's and a lot of people now, like, I mean, I've always done it. I'm sure you're probably much the same, but you've looked for jobs and, you know, tailored your own situation so you can fish midweek. You know, it's maybe putting fishing as a priority over other more important things in life, but, well...
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously one of the questions on the extra, isn't it? It's it's about sacrifice, isn't it? And
it is,
obviously we'll come to that later. It's I suppose it depends how much you want it.
Yeah.
And how much you can twist the boundaries of your other aspects of your life to fit what you want. In a selfish kind of attitude, that's the bottom line. It can become a very selfish sport.
Oh, 100%. I'm certainly guilty of that, even now to a certain extent.
Me too, mate. Me too, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm lucky in the respect of, I'm 40 now. I've been with the same lass since I was 19. And, she does let me know when I'm taking the piss.
Yes, yeah. I think that's the key, is to know when to take your foot off the gas and draw it in and then get that balance back in your life. And I'm sort of going through that stage this year. I'm in between syndicates and I'm busy with Shimano stuff. And I'm not saying I'm enjoying not going as much. I'm enjoying spending more time at home and doing different things for other people, whether it be Shimano or tuitions or magazine stuff, and I'm enjoying the stress-free hassle at the moment of not being so competitive on one water that that's all I can think about. I'm enjoying that side, and I think that's a good thing. It's made me a happier person rather than just thinking, do you know what, all I've got in my life is doing this every week, Groundhog Day, and because sometimes you can analyse that and suddenly you think, you know what, I haven't got that much of my life. But it's all about choices.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm in this fish at the minute. I didn't fish last week, just had a couple of days away with the missus, and not fishing this week because having a clutch transplant.
Mm.
And that's 2 weeks, and I'm chomping at the bit to get back. But as you know, Thursday's June the 16th. I'll be getting me a little river fix in the evening, or maybe even a few hours before work. You know, it's, and I might be late for work that day. Who knows?
Well, you suddenly might have man flu.
Although thing is, though, I work in a fishing shop. If you're phoning sick on June the 16th,
I think you're likely to get a bollocking for that.
Yeah, you might get sussed out. And you probably won't be the only one, but there's a place where I used to work. I remember they called a fella up into office, and the manager there, he got his list of his sick days out and the list of the race meetings. And of course, they all matched up, and he goes, "Written warning." And I'm thinking, if you did that with my sick days and a weather chart, so did every time.
It'll be on good moon phases, low pressure, southwesterlies, drizzle.
I'd have been on the same route, but fortunately, I wasn't not as obvious as the race goer. I tell you what, I had a break with missus. We stayed in a little hotel at the side of Rutland Water. What a sheet of water that is. There's got to be some big fish in there. And I was. It wasn't what I expected from a reservoir either. It's nice, you know, good, clear water, but not crystal clear, because that valley was dammed. It's all they used that, when you look into history of the place, because it's all the land's clay and it holds the water,
right?
You know, it's not just like a big gravelly thing. And I've seen a dead bream that had washed up in the edge. It was huge.
Jesus.
Yeah,
I remember when I started in the industry all them years ago with Armoured.
Yeah.
And I used to go into Ted Carter's in Preston, and the guy that used to run the carp section port being quite friendly with them, and he used to get a lot of the pike anglers or the boat anglers that used to go out on Windermere up in the Lake District, and they used to tell him tales about they'd seen massive carp, you know, near to the boat in very, very deep water. And then I remember him telling me the one visit that he was going to have a go for them, and I just thought, and like, you know, when you look at your phone after you've come off the phone and think, what the hell was that conversation all about? This, you know, it's huge, it's deep, where would you start? Even for somebody like you or Jamie, that's just a lot of big fish, you know, you can't even see the far bank on most of it. So I think they are in there. I think there's a lot of how you would track them down that takes big pit fishing to the extremes that I think you would have to question your sanity where you would start. But I think they definitely exist, places like Rutland and Windermere.
Yeah.
And a lot of the other big reds that are deemed predator fisheries, good trout fisheries as well. I think there's definitely big carp in them.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what confirmed it for me. There's a bit of a tackle shop down there where the, all the fluff chuckers hire the boats and what have you. And I was having a chat with the old fella in there, and they got one of my favourite fluorocarbons, one they call world's class fluorocarbon that Fully Mill do. And it's tougher than any carp fluorocarbon. It is brilliant stuff. You know, you steam it, it goes straight as a die. Anyway, plugs over. Yeah. It's, you know, they use it for, like, you know, trout and salmon leaders. But I was chatting to the fella behind the counter. I just says, oh, don't they do any coarse fishing on it, you know? I've seen this big dead bream, and he's like, no, it's just, you know, a few packed trout through the winter, and it's all trout fishing. I said, all right, is there any carp in there? And he just went, no, there's no carp in here. So I gave him the stare. And he just,
the Watson stare.
I did, the death stare. He just kind of, he started pottering around with something beneath the counter and wouldn't look at me in the eye after that.
Yeah, suddenly had a fit of Tourette's behind the counter, thinking they're all twitchy.
Yeah, but yeah, there's, when you read about the place, I did a bit of research or what have you, do you know what, it gets its water pumped to it from the Neen and the Welland in the winter.
Christ.
So, obviously, especially the Neen, you know, well known for carp over the years, it's, you know, that's the reason there might be some fry have been pumped through, or even eggs or anything sometime, and...
Yeah.
You know, they'll be in there, but, I mean, it's 40 years old, it's about the same age as me, Rutland, and, I mean, I'm never going to fish it, but even while I was just down there, like, walking round, I'm looking, and I'm thinking, you know, because there's that two arms, and, you know, one end of, well, the end of each arm is quite shallow, I say shallow, there's the lake is 3,100 acres. There's, you know, a couple hundred acres each side of shallows. Again, it's needling a field of haystacks that keeps jumping from haystack to haystack, so...
Yeah, it wouldn't be for me. It wouldn't be for... And I've never really... I have fished big lakes up to probably 40 acres, which is big enough. I've never targeted one fish. It's not the sort of angler I am, really. And I don't doubt my ability to catch them, but I do doubt my mindset and sanity, because I think I would end up... The blanks I could handle for a short period of time, but then I think the doubt would come in. And what fascinates me is when I listen to your stories and Jamie's, both on Elsto 2 from years ago, and particularly Jamie's on Colmere, where people wouldn't even see a carp for years, let alone catch one. And what sort of mindset, you know, Jamie was bang on it at that time. I remember him catching him because he was still involved with Armalead, as you were. And I remember him catching him, and I just thought, man alive, that is so far away from anything I could. I mean, that was a long time ago. I would possibly think about tackling somewhere like that. But even then, I think it would just destroy me, the fact that if I wasn't seeing anything, but I didn't feel as though I stood a chance, I think it would just drive me off in the end. I think I would end up doubting everything that I did because of the fact that I was not just catching, but certainly in Jamie's case, when he wasn't even seeing them on Colmere, you kind of think that takes a special sort of mindset.
Yeah,
to be in that zone, if you like.
Yeah, and just, sheer bloody-mindedness as well.
Without a doubt, yeah, definitely. And I've always liked, I suppose, I've done the circuits now for 15 years, where you think, well, I'd like to catch that. I'm not particularly about targeting. You think, well, there's enough stock in there that I'm going to get a few bites. And then hopefully one of the big ones will pick up one of my shit rigs. That's how I've always based me. And I still do now, to be honest. But I've got to want to be there. I've got to want to feel there's an atmosphere for me to be there and an enjoyment. I can't just, fish a hole after a hole in the ground. I suppose the nearest was the Essex Manor to that, but it didn't turn out to be just a hole in the ground. You know, it was the people that were on there that made it so enjoyable.
Yeah, we had certainly had an element of that. It was a Tuesday night barbecue with myself, Jamie, and Paul Harris almost every week.
Paul Harris, yeah, teacher Paul.
No, that was Paul Hathaway was teacher.
Ah, right. I always thought Paul Harris was teacher Paul.
No, Paul. Well, to about Teacher Paul Hathaway. He did come to one of the barbecues one night. He had some of Jamie's jalapeno burgers, and about 5 o'clock in the next morning, he was bent over spraying the trees with his backside. He didn't make him too well.
I suppose he whiled away the hours of boredom on house, though.
Oh, yeah, it was... If I can... well, yeah, I will say it. Sorry, it's kind of like wild fishing. Not just, you know, the calf, but it's wrong. We wouldn't do it nowadays, but we had his barbecue. No one ever wound in. It was not bailiffed. Yeah, yeah. Basically, people did what the hell they wanted. And there's one fella, I don't think it's one of our barbecues. It was another social. He didn't drink beer, so he brought some of his own wine and drunk the lot, was absolutely off his face. They walked him back to his swim, and I don't know if you ever saw a picture, but his bloody deep margins, you know, it's like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It just went down, like, you know, 45 degrees all the way. This fella fell in head first into, you know, stuck in the weed. There's just his two feet stuck up in the edge. His two fellas got a foot each and just dragged him out.
Jesus Christ.
You know, took his rods in and zipped him up in his bivvy just for his own safety.
Christ almighty.
Oh, it was...
that's not good.
Good days, though. Good fun. And Andrew,
it's changed a lot in that respect, hasn't it? You know, there's a lot more rules in place now and things that it looks frowned upon even.
For the good of lakes, in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I think because if it gets too out of line, when I first went to... down to Inch Hill. It was a syndicate then. It'd gone to sort of syndicate stroke day ticket on Christchurch. And we'd done the first year, and then the second year, you started to get really out of hand with not just beer, there was chemicals involved as well. And it got messy, you know, people were getting in some proper states. And then you just thought, this is getting out of hand now. And then I didn't rejoin. Because I'd sort of started writing in the mags, I'd expressed, I think, an opinion in Cart World, I think, saying that, you know, I'd really like to go on Stoneacres. And at the time, Stoneacres was really clicky.
Yeah.
And sort of kept low-key, if you like. A lot of people in the know knew what was in there. But obviously my comment didn't go down well, and I was never going to get a ticket. I think it was Fletch that was running it then, and Fletch was very heavily influenced by the click. You know, you could bribe him with either, you know, allegedly a couple of spliffs or a gram of coke, and then you would get your own way. So I didn't get a ticket. But that got really messy to the point where you thought somebody is going to get injured here, or somebody's going to do something that is going to be serious.
Yeah.
So I think it was probably a wise sort of decision that I didn't get in, to be honest. No, I wasn't partaking in activity of such behaviour. But after a few beers, I could easily have been tempted.
I'll admit to plenty of beers in my time, but that's as far as I've gone. But mainly because it costs money to do anything else, and I'm tight. But at least you can get a good deal on beer at the garage somewhere along the way.
You can't go down the Esso and buy an offer of 100 quid for an eight.
No, you mentioned about, you know, writing and cliques. And my first season on Pit One, I remember this like it were yesterday, because I'm got in the Reed swim, you know, which is like, you know, the holy grail of swims. Mm. You get in there, if you go in there and you didn't catch, you were crap. I've got in there and. I've done my first night, not caught anything, and, you know, I had a chat with one of the locals who did actually speak, and, he's put me onto a couple of spots in there, like, so, you know, thanked him, blah, blah, and I'm around the back of the reeds in between, you know, in session, my rods are wound in, and I'm looking at all these carp swimming around, and I've got a new polarising filter for my camera, so I'm clicking away, taking a few shots as you do, you know, I've gone back to my car, sorted my stuff out, rods back out, and later on, there's another fellow, one of the regulars. He's chatting with me, drinking me tea. And as it finishes, you know, he's been with me, I'll say, for about half an hour or so, having a good chat. And he says to me, you know, because I think I've just started doing one or two bits in the mags around that time as well, on my time on Pit 2. And he says, "I've seen you taking pictures of fish at Bacot Reeds. We'll not be seeing those in the magazines, will we?" And he just, like, walked off. I just thought, who do you think you are telling me where I can and can't do? The next morning, I gets my first bite from pit one, and it was a fish called the Unattended. It was my first 40 as well at 43.12.
Very nice.
And because back at that time, the catch reports in Carp Talk, it was still, like, you know, a full page in the magazines that you filled in and cut out and sent off.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, there's plenty of Elstow fish always in Carp Talk. It was always, you know, Bed's Pit or Undisclosed Clay
Pit. Yeah, yeah. Never named, was it?
Yeah, so I thought what that knob had said to me, so I wrote Elstow 1 and capital letters on it.
I don't understand all this. I mean, I do respect... I've never named waters. People always tend to know where I'm fishing.
Yeah.
For one reason or another. But I've never named a lot of waters, which is irrelevant, because I always think that, you know, if you look at places like, I suppose, the Big Grange and I don't know, Mary's Pit, you know, where there's some big fish over in the Neame Valley and other waters where there's a strict no publicity ban, I always think that that's entirely up to the owner's discretion. But what does it matter if you don't name it? Do you know what I mean? Because if people haven't got a ticket, they're always fished or they're always bailiffed by the lads that are on the syndicate or the actual owner. So if you haven't got a ticket, you're not going to run the risk. You know, I don't get, and I don't understand the reasoning behind certain lakes putting a blanket ban on publicity. So no pictures on Facebook, certainly no writing about it, no naming it. I don't understand. You know, I went on a guestie with Brad Greening down to the Cons last autumn, and it was a totally fantastic experience. We caught nothing. They're tough lakes, but it had and obviously you drive through the gate. It was like Fort Knox. You literally had to go through three huge gates before you got anywhere near the lake. And obviously next to the Cons, you've got the fisheries.
Yeah,
There's tons of water around there that's all strictly no publicity. But the members completely adhere to it because the tickets are peanuts.
Yeah.
They won't do it because somebody will see and they'll get thrown out. But I think, well, it's technically a club water, the Cottons, even though it's very much a syndicate, but it's almost run on the costings of a club water. Now, if you're not in that club, or you haven't got access to the gates, you know, what does it matter if people name it or people use, you know, some places you can't even use scenic shots. Well, that water could be anywhere in the world, couldn't it? You could be taking a picture of a nice sunset or a carpy shot, your rods or the normal shit that you see all over Facebook. And it could be anywhere. I just don't understand it, you know.
No, it's, I always thought it a bit weird, although I can, you know, I can imagine places like, you know, well, when I was on when we first joined the Woolpack, it was on the last year of the old syndicate, and there was no publicity ban in the rules, but, you know, it was just what wasn't the done thing. You know, it had become very cliquey with, you know, a small nucleus of people who were, well, thought they owned the place, to be fair.
And,
yeah, I can understand people who, you know, when they've got a good thing, again, not a mega expensive ticket, and they just want to keep a bit of a lid on it. And, fair enough and that, but no, I do think some people take it too far, because, I mean, you mentioned, you know, the Cons and the fisheries. I mean, I dare say there's a good percentage of carp anglers have at least heard of them and know they're in the Con Valley somewhere anyway.
Yeah, of course.
So, but now I remember when I mentioned Con Valley, I fully remember one trip down there. I went down there with mates a few years back, and just walking around some of the waters, we got to quite a way around Raisby 2, thinking it was Raisby 1. found the road lake, and we quickly got shown the gate that we climbed over to get in there. Found Raisby 1. And
I think it's a certain mentality. If you, I don't, I've never poked, because I'm the sort of angler that wants to relax. I want to enjoy my surroundings, and I want to think that I haven't got to be looking over my shoulder.
Yeah.
I don't think it's right. I mean, I remember, I think it was Carp Addict, there was a magazine once, that, and they actually had a monthly piece called The Poacher or something like that.
Yeah,
and
they did.
And I think I just don't think it sends the right message to people. You know, all this, what's been discussed recently on the Corpcast about people follow trends that they see in the magazines, whether it's brace shots or multiple fish in a net or whatever it may be. I think when people read about that, I've always frowned upon it. And I don't think there's any way to sugarcoat it. You know, it's poaching. It's illegal. You're not supposed to be there. Now, I know people do it. I know Jamie's done it. I know people do it a lot. But that's fine. But I don't think it should be broadcast. And I used to look at this magazine and think, I think it was Johnny Bannister that owned it or did something with it. And I thought, well, what sort of message is that sending out to the public? You know, carp fishing was starting to bloom, not to the degree it is now, and the magazine doesn't exist anymore. But it would be interesting to see how that would be talked about on social media now, if there was blatant articles on guesting or poaching. That'd be really interesting. Whether there'd be the trolls would come out and say, well, you can't do that, you know. And same thing with the Mia. Yeah, the Black Mia, fantastic fish. People did it because it was a fantastic fish, but it was still poaching. It's still illegal.
I've got to be totally honest with you, it was a bit close. I'd have been on it like a tramp on chips.
See, I never would. I would, whilst I think the Black Mirror, and I'm not knocking people that have gone on there and caught it, whether it's Laney or Stevie Briggs or Mike Wilmot, because I've got a lot of respect for people like Mike Wilmot and Laney. And it takes a certain, whether it's the certain kind of mindset to think, I'm going to do whatever it takes to catch them fish. And I don't knock the people that do it. It's just not for me. And I just don't think it's not done as much now. And you don't see people broadcasting the fact that they're guesting as much, because I think there will be absolute anarchy with the rocketing of social media and how things get blown out of proportion on there. I think it will be frowned upon in a lot of circles now, because it gives the troll something to jump on and have a go at. You know, you know yourself, they'll jump on anything, whether it's somebody not using a mat that's big enough or somebody not doing something that they don't think is correct, and they're on it. Like, it's almost like some of these trolls, it must just be like a full-time occupation for them, that they see something and they just seem to be able to have an opinion on it and dig somebody out. So they'd have an absolute field day with the poaching situation, I think, nowadays. Luckily, back then, social media was nowhere near what it is now.
Yeah, when I think back to what I was like, I'm glad there was no not just fishing either, I'm glad there was no Facebook around in my youth. Oh my, I'd probably be locked up.
Oh yeah, I am, yeah. I've done a lot of things that I'm not proud of.
I'd be locked up, I would have had a couple of kickings.
Yeah, definitely.
But no, it's a strange one with the poaching, because, the Miles Gibson case, a while back, he got caught and, he got punished, which, he broke the law and, it's what to expect.
But
I do think the Angling Trust handled it a bit wrong, trying to make him some sort of poster boy for their little campaign.
Yeah, I stayed out of it because, I don't want to have too much of an opinion, because I know Miles and he's a very good angler, he's a nice guy. But I also think that however the story got out, and I don't think it was him that sort of sent, I think it was somebody else that leaked the pictures or named the water or something went on anyway that managed to enable the Angling Trust to finger him, if you like, for poaching. He's caught the fish, the fantastic fish, and I know other people that have caught him. But if you're going to poach and then you get caught, I think you've also got to hold your hands up. I do accept that the Angling Trust made a complete scapegoat out of him. I really do believe that. And Miles, you could probably ask Miles, and Miles doesn't give two shits that he was fined, because he's still got them fish in his album. But if you run the risk, if you get caught, I think you've got to hold your hands up and take the punishment. You know, I know there was guys that were prosecuted on the Mia who got caught, and there was no big hoo-ha then. There was no big Angling Trust fucking case. It wasn't in all the bloody papers and blah, blah, blah. And, as much as I think Miles is a great guy, I had to hold his hands up and take the punishment, because that's what was dished out to you. I think it was extreme on the basis of what people get fined for mugging an old lady or kicking seven shades of shit out of somebody on the street. I think it was completely out of proportion and taken out of taken out of context.
Yeah. Mind, what would a syndicate ticket on the lake with those fish cost?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, it'd be astronomical, wouldn't it? You know, it'd probably knock Wally out of the sky.
Yeah, because I've heard that's what a lot of people who fish Colmere, you know, if they got caught, I've got to pay my syndicate fees this year. You know, if it's brushed off like that.
Yeah. I know back in the day before RK got Raysbury, I think they only sold a very... It wasn't even into double figures, the amount of tickets they sold for Raysbury.
It was certainly not worth it.
It was ridiculous, because, you know, people... It was never Bailey's. You could just basically fish it for free, and you were never going to get caught. So you look at places like Raysbury now, totally secure, totally managed, totally different than what it was, and you kind of think there's got to be a better place to fish, or a more secure place to fish for people that want to go down that neck of the woods.
Yeah, definitely. I've Raysbury is somewhere I've like admired and read all the stories about, and I know it's gone through a lot of changes, but it's somewhere I'm definitely going to make a trip to sooner or later. Well, hopefully sooner rather than later, because, you know, just to fish there, just to stand in, and I'm assuming the Rocky Barge Swim where Terry caught Mary's still there, and
it's probably called something else now, but it is. That's the whole thing that I found magical about the place when I first went. Bear in mind, it was closed, and it had been boomed off then between the two lakes, but it was magical to just go there and stand in Springgates, and then stand on the rock, and stand in the giant footsteps where the James Bond car went in the film. It was magical to place it all together, but then also there was a definite air of mystery that you thought, well, how would you tackle this? And then you look to the right into the south side, past the sunken barge, the famous iconic Raysbury barge, and you think, well, you've kind of got to doff your cap to the people who used to fish here and even used to find any carp, let alone catch one, because the topography of the lake and the obstacles and the lack of access, and that's obviously, that was the appeal to people, because it wasn't ran out. But you have to take your hat off. And then I was doing a tuition earlier this spring at Baden Hall, and I bumped into, and I didn't know who it was, and we just got chatting, and it turned out to be Dave Malin. And obviously he was talking, he wasn't with me too long because I was with a client, and he mentioned Wellington, and I didn't know, and this isn't because I thought he should know who I was, because that's not the sort of bloke I am, but then he got talking about 50 pounders, and he said, well, you've had one from Wally, and he said, you've had one from Owen Fern, and then he mentioned that he caught one, and he wasn't doing it so he could tell me how good he was or what he caught. And then I said, what was it? And obviously he got chatting, and then we got chatting a bit more. And then my punter went to bed quite early. So I was straight round to his shed. I'm like, right, let's start talking. And that's who it was. And I was absolutely mesmerised by the stories of having the Raysbury fish, his Yateley fish, the Mere. And I just thought, Jesus Christ, you know, and I've bumped into you on a barren lake with sheds on it at Baden Hall. Found him very, very fascinating. Found him really interesting guy. And it was nice to meet him. But I wouldn't have known him if he'd have walked past me, if he hadn't told me who he was. And it just goes to show, doesn't it? I wasn't starstruck, because I don't get starstruck, but I was just so in admiration of what he caught all those years ago. And you think, my God, the technology wasn't there, the ability to cast or to do things wasn't there, the rig mechanics wasn't there. He's always been very obviously knowledgeable about bait, because he showed me some of the bait that he makes now under his own name, and it smelt, you know, I don't know anything about bait, but he looked and he tasted and smelt. You think, right, yeah, that would catch carp anywhere. And he was saying that a lot of the mixes are still the ones that he caught the Raysbury fish on, the Yateley fish on, the Mere fish on, and you kind of just have to doff your cap and give a bit of respect to people like that are out there and still doing it after all these years.
Yeah, definitely. Bait, I've been kind of floating around the wilderness, not really, too interested, but you know, recently started off with this, you know, LA calf, and the reason I did that, I seen the name John Baker attached to it.
John Baker, yeah.
And I thought, he's when his first company were Bait 78. I mean, I'm like, oh, I know nothing about bait. I'd rather concentrate on that, where to put it and how to use it, and let other people worry about
I'm exactly with you there, Mark. Yeah, there's a few guys in there, even though people like us that are absolutely clueless to a certain degree about bait, you know, your old school Bill Cotton, Mike Wilmot, John Baker, people like that, and obviously Dave Mallin, I think, falls into that, Keith Sykes, all the old boys from way back when, even Brian Garner, who was one of the first partners in NutriBaits with Bill and Skiddy, I think it was, and I've always got a fondness for that as well, and I'll always have a fondness for not only because I think Mike Wilmot is possibly one of the nicest people I've ever met, and I just think he conducts himself in such a lovely manner, but his bait's been the same for years, and it's still out there doing it and catching it, and the same with NutriBaits. I know they've gone through a sort of transformation period now where I think Casca bought the company, but
they have,
you know, I always have a fondness for Bill, because back in the day when we used to use Richworth Frozens, and then NutriBaits hit the scene, and we started rolling bait, really not having a clue what we were doing. We were just copying mixes out of little booklets that used to be in tackle shops from NutriBaits, and we couldn't afford Inival because it was too expensive. We were using Enervi, and we were using some of these mixes like with Lang Lang oil and like emulsifier. We had to put emulsifier in it. We hadn't got a clue what it did. We were just told that allowed the oils to release from the bait. So we thought, right, well, put a shitload of that in. Things like sweet cajouser, cassia terpenes. I mean, I talk about it now. I haven't got an absolute clue what they are, but I just remember when we put Enervi in a mix, put those little flavours in, and we caught shitloads of carp on it. Places like, we used to go to Knighton Reservoir and Cottle Mill, and we just, you know, we caught loads and loads of fish on it. So I've always got that fondness for Bill, not just as a person that can write and that can make me laugh, but somebody that is, I think, should command respect from a very tricky industry, the bait industry. So I can only, I mean, it's a tragedy, but you probably say the name John Baker to a lot of the people that are new to carp fishing in the last few years, and they wouldn't have a clue who he was. But you say to people our age, and even guys like us that know nothing about bait, that will always ring a bell.
Yeah. I mentioned it before, I was fishing with Dave Moore. Yeah, I mentioned it, and he went, plum. Yeah, because we all love one of his plum flavours, and there's another one that Dave reeled off two or three, to be honest. I can't remember, but, you know, Dave Moore's another one up there on the bait game.
Yes, he is, He's very, very, well, Dave is a very knowledgeable man about anything. Seems to be a very intelligent man, very quiet, quite reserved, I think, until he gets to know you a bit. He doesn't give it the big bollocks. He hasn't got an ego. He's just a very nice man to be around. And I know, after talking to him at Euroaqua, you know, he thinks about specific mixes for specific waters, Euroaqua included. And I think because of his heavy involvement with RG, rolling baits, I think it is, I think he doesn't have anybody else touching his bait. He will only trust them to roll it, I think, and he trusts their ingredients, or he sources the ingredients. And such is his meticulousness for bait that you've kind of got to think, you know, he knows what he's talking about. And again, some of the stuff that I've listened to recently with Frank about his singles and about such high levels of flavour and attractants and oils that you think, oh my God, it'd be like a traffic light. But then again, you know, Frank, he was the instigator and the guy that brought these single updates to the forefront of the market. And I think people forget that, don't they, in the modern day scene, that people that have been around a long time, they don't just spout shit for the sake of spouting shit. You know, what they say has got a theory and it's got proof that it works.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'll be honest, I don't pick up too many magazines now, but yeah, if I pick up a Cart World, I'll always read what Bill Cotton writes. He's got a brilliant style. And again, like you, I've got a lot of respect for him. First boilie I ever rolled was, I won a bag of Four Seasons mix at some slideshow at first when it had just come out. You know, there's like some cranberry Nutri-Fruit and salmon oil and whatever else in there. So, I need to get some rolling stuff now. And
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I've just talked.
We used to love rolling bait, and we used to roll it at my mum's. And obviously, you were rolling the sausages by hand, and then we hadn't got a compressor gun or none of that sort. The stuff was available, but we couldn't afford to buy that. We got a little gardener rolling table that, looking back, was probably about 6 inches wide, so we did about 10 baits at a time. And we used to love it, and it used to stink the house out, because after Enervite, we then progressed to one of Dave's Moore's mixes, which is the Big Fish Mix, is still going today. And that, again, we just caught absolutely tons of fish. My mum used to hate it, and I'm sure she used to think, well, can't you roll something like Tutti Frutti or Honey Yucatan that's going to make the house smell mildly attractive rather than fish meals? And then my old man had come in from work, and he used to hit the roof because the house used to stink like days after, you know. And you look back and you think, how did she ever? We were boiling them in an old chip pan, and we just loved it. And I think there's a lot of that that's missing now. And I'm not saying that it's a bad thing, because I haven't rolled bait for years, and I'm sure a lot of other people haven't, because it's convenient. But I look fondly back at those days, because we used to love it, like, you know, not having a clue what we were doing, chucking all this stuff in a bowl, and then after a few hours, you've got like a load of lovingly round or roundish balls of stinky fish meal paste with a skin on them. We used to think, oh God, we're proper carp anglers now, we're rolling our own bait and everything, you know, God. And it was fantastic times.
Oh, definitely. You just ran we used to fish with a lad called Darren, and we had a season using it wasn't Big Fish Mix, was it Fish Food Mix, the other one that they'd done just slightly before that? We'd read somewhere that Hutch's Monster Crab were a good flavour.
Oh dear.
Yeah, obviously an absolutely brilliant fish catcher, but it's a single man's bait. He stinks to high heaven. And, we were rolling it in my mate's shed. But I remember one summer afternoon, you know, it must have been 25, 28 degrees. Yeah, we're both just there in his shorts, tops off. We've got his Coleman in the corner, we're boiling it. We've got a little production line going. We used to roll 20 egg mix, divide it into four. You know, I'd bait up on a Tuesday with one, he'd bait up on a Thursday with one, and then we'd have a bag each to fish with at the weekend. But I remember this afternoon, his neighbour, who we didn't go along with anyway, came in from shopping. She started effing and blinding, took a washing in, shut all the windows. But we've got these towels of all these monster crab boilies drying out on this lawn next to her washing.
Oh, dear. But they're good times, weren't they? I think.
Oh, they're brilliant.
I love it, you know. And I remember when we first took, I think it'd be 92, because my old man had passed away in 91. And I think from sort of 88 onwards, we'd always had 5 days of cuttle mill. And we used to think about it. It was this massive journey. A cuttle mill was about an hour from my house, and we'd only fish the days. But we'd sleep under the barn, and had quite a troubled childhood with my father. And obviously, we got quite close up to when he passed away. But we'd rolled shitloads of this big fish mix, not thinking that, well, it only takes an hour to get home, so we'd put it all in cool boxes, and we took it on the mill. And we absolutely battered it. And even to the point Tony Higgins was still alive then, and he'd come round and he said, what are you using? And you sort of knew you'd cracked it a bit then, when the owner, because he used to see all sorts of stuff. Because I think he thought we were using either tigers or hemp or something that was banned. You know, this is before the days of spotting. You know, everything was a diablo catapult, and it took you about an hour to get 100 baits out. And he came around, and I think it was more out of curiosity that we were probably doing something that we shouldn't have been doing. And when, obviously, you know, you'd only got your day gear, and so it's the baits in their turn. And it didn't matter where we took it, we caught absolutely shed loads of carp. And then obviously as time progressed and progressed, the bait rolling market seemed to get taken over by people that would do it for you. Yeah. And I think it's better for that, you know, it's something else that you don't have to worry about.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've not rolled a boiler for years, but then, like I say, we've got people who roll great bait. We don't need to worry about it. And it is a lot more convenient. It's just go to the freezer, grab a bag, or, you know, grab a bag and grab it and go, defrost it, and off you go.
Yeah, grab and go is the way forward, definitely.
Yeah, but Well, yeah, we've been chatting for over an hour already.
Really?
Yeah, I just glanced up at time there.
Christ, but, that's good.
I'll tell you, I was going to...
That's good for the podcast. We go on, we waffle on about nothing in particular, and we end up with a good product. That's surely got to be the means of a good conversation.
Oh, yeah, especially when there's not a single note at the side of me to take it in any direction whatsoever. It just goes wherever. I say it's just... When I listen to other podcasts, you know, the best ones are where, especially old wrestling ones I like, because I'm a bit of a geek. It's just when you get two old wrestlers on talking about all the road stories, it's brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, I've listened to, through the winter, I'm sort of on a bit of a keep fit regime. I have been for quite a while. So we only fish, I only tend to fish days in the winter. So the days I don't fish, I'll sort of go do a bit of walking and I just stick a podcast on, and I find myself like literally glued to it all the time, and it's not just because I'm talking to you, and I've even listened to lots of others. I really enjoyed Scott Lloyd's one, which is quite a recent one. The Frank Warwick ones are always mesmerising. A lot of people. Holmes is a good, because my ears, I stopped listening, I've got an headache, because Holmes, he just, whilst he is completely insane, and some of his eyes, I've even said this to him face to face, we were on the same syndicate last year, and some of his ideas are so crazy that you think that's not true, you can't have done that, but then you look at what he catches, and, and I think it just goes to prove that you can catch carp however you want to catch them if you put your mind to it. You know, Holmesy has got obviously a very thinking mind and a very active mind about doing things differently, and it works for him. And again, you know, the Nashie ones are very mesmerising. The one where he was half pissed with Jamie was absolutely class. I really, really enjoyed it. And I find myself liking listening to Kev more. When I was involved with him as a consultant, I never used to listen, not listen to him. I was just there as a consultant, I suppose. But I found myself really interested in a lot of stuff that he has to say. And you can tell that passion, whether it's for his wakes or for the church or the cops or for what he does at the factory with the lads, you know, and I think the older guys really come across very, very well. I'd like you to get Bill on, whether Bill would do one, Bill Cotton, I think that would be very good. Again, Mike Wilmer, all the lads that I grew up, I suppose idolising isn't the word, but, you know, Tim Paisley would be an absolute class one. Just to put a different, and he mixes it up, doesn't he? You've got the new lads like Scott Lloyd who are very active on the scene now, and Daryl. But I do like listening to the people, the older guys that I grew up reading about. So that's my wish list for the Carpcast for the future.
Yeah, it's like we are trying to mix it up a bit. A while back, Jamie says, we had this chat where we need one or two maybe younger people on. Jamie says, right, just go out and buy a magazine and just look at names, see who's on the scene, so to speak. So I bought a Carpology, and there was Terrier, Nice Sharp, Dave Lane, Adam Penning. It's just all this same old faces, isn't it? But
it's ever so weird when and I know this has happened in the past, and again, it's not an ego thing, but it's really hard to describe how the scene is going to go, because there's so many people now that seem to want to do it for the wrong reasons, whether it's for sponsorship or recognition. So I appreciate that once us old bastards have drifted off, whether it's Laney or me or Ian Russell or whoever it may be, and we've had our time and we're no longer needed, because that's what does happen, because I've seen it happen before. And we accept that that's going to happen. So you think the new breed that are coming through, they've almost got to be given a chance, or else they're never going to get the credibility of being a recognised angler. If that, I don't use a famous angler or a named angler, because I think that's a load of bollocks. We're just people that go fishing and very fortunate to do so. But they've almost got to be given their chance. But then I think the general public like to read about the names that have been around for quite a long time. And certain magazines used to do it, and they'd put certain names together for an issue, and the sales would go up, and then they'd go back to having the lesser guys that aren't as well known in, with a couple of perhaps you Adam Penning or Dave Lane in, and the sales would filter down. So the older names, whilst you can get overexposed, I do appreciate that. it still does sell magazines, and people do still want to read and listen to and see what they're doing. You only have to look at Facebook for that, you know. But it's hard to see how the new guys will do it. I think a lot of people do it for the wrong reasons. I think whether they think it's a life of champagne, cocaine, and gold bullion when you become a consultant or a paid consultant or a sponsored angler, when it's not quite like that. And there's definitely, I've done it before. I do it several times where I can't even get to two hands. Where, and then I've run out of names that people that earn what you would call a full-time living out of fishing. And I think there's only one guy that gets paid to go fishing, and that's Terry.
Yeah, and he's earned every penny he's got.
And he's earned every penny. But yeah, to people like me and Laney and Ian Russell and Mark Pitchers and Adam Penning, yes, we get a salary from, for me, from Shimano Normark or Shimano Dynamite.
Yeah.
But I'm not just allowed to go fishing. I have to do stuff that whether it's open days, writing, filming, DVD production, shows, product development, so the stuff that you do, you're obliged to do.
It's work.
I think people just see, yeah, it's work. And I think that's why the people that have been in it quite a long time survive, because they realise that it's almost like I've got two sets of fish. I've got my work fishing and I've got my own fishing. And I tell you what, I do a lot more of my work fishing than I do my own fishing. But I realise that's my occupation, that's my job, and that has to come first. And the day you take your foot off the paddle, there'll always be somebody chipping away at the door to try and get your job.
Yeah.
So I think as long as people realise that, then... But there is a lot of people, I think, do it for the wrong reasons. I think whether it's to get Facebook likes or... I don't know... Facebook is a brilliant tool if used in the right way, but my God, yeah, you see some shit on there, don't you?
Oh, you do. But, we'll not talk about him. Well,
I managed to do a talk after that, mentioning his name.
Yeah, well, let's carry on. But yeah, the other thing I would add to that is, we've just been saying about, working and that. It's not something that happens instantly either. And I use, yourself as an example. You started off, was it just repping for Armaled so long ago? And, you've worked for reach the position that you've got now with Shimano.
I think the thing that stood me in good stead is I'm quite good with people. And I find, and I think if you treat people the way you want to be treated, you'll get on. And if you get discovered, if that's the word you want to use, and get taken on by a company, I think the angling side of it and what you catch is now secondary to how you can conduct yourself at a show, if you're a personable person at open days. And I think that's how companies look at people now. Yes, if they can catch carp, it helps. But the days years ago when I was at Armaled, my first feature, I was approached because I was catching carp at Linear and Horseshoe and Lynchill, and I got approached by Crafty Carp, but that doesn't happen now. You get the features because you're involved with a company that's spending X amount of thousands of pounds on advertising. But you used to get recognised. You don't think, because there's so many more people trying to get recognised now, it's a harder job to break through. It's still a great industry, and I'm not knocking it for one minute. I'm so, so fortunate, and I love what I do, and I've met some fantastic people. But if you work hard, and if you treat people with a bit of respect, and if it works for you, and you get discovered, and you get to work your way up the ladder, then that's brilliant. But don't let it take over what it's supposed to be, and that's an enjoyable hobby that you're supposed to love doing for the passion and for the catching of the carp and for the being outside, not because you want to be the P. Diddy of the carp angling world, because it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen, but let me tell you now, it's a very cottage industry, which is a fantastic industry. And like Mark Holmes has said, there's a lot more good uns than bad uns. That's the way to finish it.
Yeah. I think that's a brilliant way to finish this podcast chat.
Certainly.
Thanks, Ian McMillan.
Thank you, Mark. Take care, buddy.
Ask us a question.
This has turned into a long show because of my rant, which was a personal thing. So should we do something for the listeners? Should we answer a question or something?
Yeah, we've got a question down there, haven't we?
Yes, Nick Spires.
Spires.
I'm Spires. Unless you spell it wrong.
I'll show it will be corrected.
Now, he's curious on our opinions. Loves listening to the Carcast, and would like to know if we could pick four rigs to use, and that's it. What would they be and why? Two bottom bait / wafter rigs and two pop-ups. The present he is using about six different rigs, depending on the situation he's fishing, but wants to try and get it down to four, if not less. So, let's just... I'm just thinking, I use mainly two, and 95% of the time, one.
I was going to say exactly the same thing. I use one rig 80% of the time. I have a pop-up rig that I like if I want to use a pop-up, and then I also use a version of the stiff link for sort of more choddy situations. So I have three. I have one 80% of the time because I mainly use snowmen and bottom baits. I like the cultured hook baits, which are perfect, like waftery type baits, but basically it's still my blowback bottom bait rig. I have a rig that I told you about quite a few shows ago, that and around the Christmas time, where I nabbed it off Joe Morgan's Carp TV, shout out to Joe, which was using the Thinking Tackle bait screws directly on the hook. I'm making like a very swivelly type rig. I really like it, actually. It's my pop-up rig. I need to use it more because I've caught well on it as soon as I used it. And obviously the hinge stiff link, I use a version of the hinge stiff link, but with like a coated braid with the coating still on for the hook length. And sometimes I use it just normal braid, like the Nash Armour braid's great for it. But that's it, three rigs. I'm never going to use another rig. What I will do is adapt those rigs, so I'll lengthen them, shorten them, depending on the situation, what I'm fishing over, what the bottom's like. You know, I'll lengthen the hook link. But I cannot think for the life of me why you would need six rigs.
Yeah, I'm the same. I use my multi-rig for pop-ups, which I've droned on about on here plenty of times. The only thing I really do in that nowadays is make sure I have a pinpoint sharp hook. Hey, another plug there for Mark and his hooks.
Yeah.
And you know, for the bottom baits, wafter rigs, I just use pretty much the same thing I've done for ages, a little shrink tube kicker over the eye of the hook, a little small piece of tubing holding it halfway around the bend, and that is it. You know, I do prefer a straight point on my hook, and that goes for every hook I use, and there's not really a lot to add. It's all about that. It's about where you put it, you know, your baiting situation. You know, rigs, I put down, you know, probably number four in my list of importance.
Yeah, I you know, three, maybe two, and, you know, I can comfortably use one rig for 99% of my fishing if I really wanted to. You know, it's my normal sort of blowback rig that we've spoke about many times. I've got a question, actually, that somebody sent me to my private Facebook page. How am I going to be able to say his name? Michael, Semenyuk.
Ask us a question.
Semenyuk. Hi, Jamie. Big fan of the Carpcast. Wondering if you could answer me a question. Fishing Thornycroft pools on the Prince Albert ticket. I used to fish them as a kid, actually. I know Thornycroft. The place is very shallow, full of silt. In 10 nights, I've had 10 takes for no fish. I've chopped and changed my rigs, and nothing seems to be working. I was wondering, have you encountered a similar situation before, and how did you get around it? My confidence is low. I was hoping to fish reeds mere, but this has knocked me a bit. So I asked him, are you sure? The first thing I thought is maybe the nettle bites, shallow lake, lots and lots of liners. I've had certain lakes where you get loads of liners, and I've had them, you know, even when I used to fish in clips and stuff, I've had it pull the bobbin right to the top, ping the clips out, you know, and actually bend the rod tip round before dropping right back down to where they started. I've had that on many lakes. I can imagine that happening on shallow lakes a lot. So obviously my question was, are you sure they're actually bites? Because liners are savage in shallow water and can take line from the spool. And he said, I have hooked into the majority. They stay on for no longer than 10 seconds. I had it in my head they could be trailers. Would you suggest moving back to a lead clip approach? I didn't read that bit because I just thought I'm going to answer it on the show. The fact that he says, would you suggest moving back to a lead clip? I'm wondering if he's using chods. because you do drop a lot of fish with chod rigs. It's kind of par for the course. Yeah. I know Shelley has got it down to a fine art where he doesn't lose many fish. He's fine-tuned the chod fishing very well. You know, he's got a specific way of fishing them with his rods up in the air and the line dropping off the reel. The rods in the air help the hooking as well, I believe. That's why he has them pointing up like your kind of Euro fishing. He's very keen on that. He has uses really long hook link sections on the chods, and he has a really big curve in it, which I guess is, you know, is aiding with the hooking. Michael, if you're using chods, definitely get off them. Use one of the three rigs we've just spoke about. You know, use yourself a pop-up rig with a long boom, if it's, you know, quite silty. If you are hooking them and you are feeling the fish, then it's your rig. There's something wrong with your rigs. For sure, to have 10 fill the fish for 10 seconds and not to not to land any, there is definitely something wrong with your rigs. I very rarely get a fish drop off for no reason on a normal rig, you know, my normal rigs. In fact, I've probably had less than 5 in the last 10 years that have just dropped off for no reason. I have probably lost 5 on chods, and I hardly ever use chods. If you are using some sort of helicopter chod rig, go for a lead clip. Use quite light leads if it's silty. I know Thornycroft, it's not a big cast anywhere, you know, it's very narrow. You know, I was casting further than the middle, you know, as a kid with, you know, 10-foot rods, and we were probably like 1.25-pound test curve and stuff, and probably using line, tiny little reels and all sorts. So you don't need to worry about casting. Use the lightest lead you can get away with. Use a lead clip, and just go for a very standard blowback rig or the multi rig that Julian uses. If you check our Carpcast page, our main page, have a look in our videos, under pictures, videos, and you'll see Julian Cundiff. There's an hour video of him talking through his setup, very in great detail on there. And you know, he uses that multi-rig same as you do, Mark, and use that rig with a decent length hook link, a lightish lead on a lead clip, and you're going to be fine. I would be very surprised if you keep losing them, but do keep in touch with us, and let us know if anything changes. You got anything to add to that, Mark? Can you think of any reasons why you might be losing them other than what I've said?
No, not really. When you mentioned trailers, that's what I was thinking of. But
yeah, there could be trailers, but other people would be getting the same thing if that's the case.
They would, yeah.
So, you know, check with some of the wranglers if they're doing it. But I is using a helicopter rig. There is a lot of movement on the heli. If I imagine the carp could shake it out, I'm not worried about the carp shaking the helicopter rig out. But yeah, go back to your leg clip anyway. Go back to basics. Whenever I've had problems when I was younger with dropping fish and stuff, which I have been through stages of that, I just go back to the absolute basic rig that I know works. Knotless knot, you know, just a half a centimetre gap from the hook to the, you know, top of the bait once it's threaded on. You know, very straightforward rig, and just get your confidence back. Yeah, that's what I would recommend. I tell you what else happened today, Mark. I made a post on our Facebook about it.
I saw it, yeah. How's your nose?
Yeah, Mark Bryant sent me his Sent From Hell pop-ups that he's promised to for ages and ages. They hadn't come, and I've been out today getting stuff ready for our trip. As soon as I opened the front door, I knew they'd arrived. What a smell, and it's a smell that you can't put your finger on. It's kind of like almost like a fishy smell, but not. They stink. As soon as I opened the door, Rachel shouted to me. She was in the other room, like, doing some packing and stuff, and she was like, the delivery driver wasn't very happy, said he's had this stink in his van all day. he was not happy at all. And she went, get them out of the house.
They must be good then.
You'll see from that thread that I put it in the official Carpcast fan page, that post, and you'll see everybody underneath basically saying how good they are. So I want to take them to Bled with me. Can I stand them for like 2 days travelling each way in the car? I'm not sure if I can pull up with them. Will they get through
customs? They kill the sniffer dogs.
They've got some liquid with them as well. The pop-ups on their own smell ridiculous. They sent some in white and some in pink in two different sizes. I'm really keen to use them because the fish ain't missing them. And they obviously work. You know, Simon Scott uses them. Lots of people use them. So I'm extremely, extremely keen to use them. But I don't know how I'm going to physically keep them about me. So we'll see. We'll see. I will keep you informed. I'll be doing some true reviews once I've used them. I'm going to take them with me, unless I forget, because I have like a bait fridge and freezer, and they're in there at the minute just because they're sealed and it's out the way. But the house still stinks of them. So the delivery driver's van will stink of them. And if anybody pisses me off really badly, I've got a little spray thing of them. Someone's getting it. Little load of cologne behind the ears.
You don't put it behind the ears. You just through the air vent to the car. They have to buy a new car after that.
Another
bit. Sell it.
Yes, obviously that would be criminal damage, so we don't condone anybody doing that, but I have heard of it.
We've never done it in the past either of us, so don't do it.
Don't do it, no. Something else I've seen on the net before we wrap this up, because of my rant, this has gone a long while, so we do apologise, but we hope you're just passing time or dropping off to sleep listening to this as I do in my podcast. But a friend of mine, Alex Mollart, has purchased a complex of lakes. This has been ongoing for quite some time now, and he's finally got them. The former Borwick Fisheries up in the northwest. We do have a few decent lakes in the northwest, not so many in the sort of Lancashire Cumbria area, and that's exactly where this complex is. It's the former Borwick Lakes complex that was called Catch 23. The main lake's called Jimmy's Lake, which is like an 18 acre carp lake. It's already got fish to 40 pound in there. I think the biggest is 40. It's got half a dozen sort of mid 30s and a pretty decent stock of fish. Alex, I hope you won't mind me saying this, he's got a few quid. He owns First Stop Finance. He's an extremely successful chap. He loves his fishing. I see him in the casino when I'm playing poker pretty regular as well. You know, he's got a very successful business, and he's investing a lot of money into this complex. He's paid a decent chunk of dough for it. I wouldn't like to surmise how much, but you know, I bet he ain't got much change from £1 million. There's a nice cafe on there, really nice cafe, you know, that non-fishermen use. You know, it's like a restaurant, not a cafe. I've been up there for a food. It's extremely fine dining. They only have like six, it's like an a la carte menu, like six things on the menu. Not sure what his plans are for the cafe, but I did see him advertising for a chef the other day. But the work he's got planned for these lakes is unreal. You know, he's re-landscaping them. He's he's ordered all sorts of bank size vegetation, sets of reeds. He wants every peg. He's trying to make the perfect syndicate. He's planting stuff between the pegs, so your own little peg is private. You can't see the next peg. He's building an island in the middle of the lake. He's ordered about 40 grand's worth of fish from the hand-picked fish that he's going down to pick each carp from the various suppliers, you know, all the top UK suppliers. He's trying to make the perfect fishery in the north. And I'm really keen. It is open as a day ticket in the meantime. I think you can fish it as normal. There are fish to £40 in there already. He's got a lot of very knowledgeable people involved in this. The local EA representative, I know Matt Dent's had a lot to do with it. He was the EA bailiff for the Northwest. A few other, I don't know if I'm supposed to mention everyone that's been involved, but he's got a top group of people around him that are involved, know about fishing, and there are going to be places on the Syndicate and you can fish on a day ticket. There's a few other lakes there as well. There's catfish, there's pike fishing on there, there's all sorts of stuff. So check it out. The Clearwater Fisheries is what he's renamed it. There is a Facebook group knocking about. I'll share that as well, and I'll maybe share it on our page. But yeah, watch this space. It's going to be one of the finest fisheries in the country within a few years, and it's already a great fishery now. You know, I mean, 40 pounders in on the Cumbria border is not to be sniffed at as it is. So yeah, do check that out, especially if you live in the northwest. What's going down in Carp Talk this week, Mark?
In Carp Talk, well, there's quite a few things. Do you know what the top story is?
I can guess. It's the story of a 92.5-pounder caught from the Graviers in France by none other than Nick Reedy Maddox. Would that be true?
Apparently it is. Do you know him?
Yeah, I've heard of him. Yeah. So yes, pity it wasn't me catching it, but shout out to Nick. He's the boss. What else is in there?
Yeah, there's three more 50s. I say more 50s, that's a bloody 90, but yeah, 50s from St Ives, Shallow Lagoon, Cottington Lakes and Bergfield. I'm pretty sure that's not the Bergfield Common.
Yes, it did do a different 50 a little while back. I don't know if this is that same one or another one, but I know there was a number of big old 40s in there and they're growing. But yeah, check out Carp Talk for the information. I guess in the other competition this week as well, did he?
Yeah, competition. Oh, they've always got competitions and we want everyone to win. So they've got
As some of our readers, I've had two messages now from people that have won the Carp Talk competition. I've said this many times, if you haven't heard some previous shows, there are few people that enter competitions, and the serial competition enterers in all magazines, TV programs and everything, they win a lot. I've seen programs about it. You've just got to enter them, because you'd be surprised how few people get off their arse, fill in the forms and send it off. It's my ambition to get a Carpcast listener winning the Carp Talk competition every week. And we've had a few of our guys listening, because I keep getting messages off people. So what can you win this week?
Always good to see, and there is some new Solar Tackle P1 stainless bankware and a selection of Tasker mainline leader and hook link gear to give away.
Yes, so Solar gear is always good. Martin Locke, top guy, and obviously the Tasker stuff decent as well. Get this week's Carp Talk for that. I'll tell you how you can get Carp Talk. Obviously, there is a digital version that comes out on a Saturday, and it's only $1.49. You can get that to any device you own, your Apple device, your Android, PC, MacBook, whatever, and you get that from www.pocketmags.com. It's only £1.49. You can keep up to date with the latest stuff, and the printed version, costing only $1.99, comes out in the shops on a Tuesday. So a digital version, you get the info, you get the information 3 days early. You can stock is located, tell you where you can buy it from on the Carp Talk website, or you can just go into your local news agents, ask them and they will order it for you. But there's a load of features in there as well, is there not?
Yeah, there is. There's Tom Foreman from Nash, he tells you all about salty squid balls.
Yeah.
Are you interested in salty squid balls?
I do.
Is that a euphemism for something?
Chocolate salty squid balls. Yes.
Sing on, sing along.
check that out from Tom. I know Martin Pick's in there this week as well, isn't he? Did he catch the turtle finally from the weekly Welly Whacker?
That was last week, I believe. He has had the turtle.
Sorry, I apologise. You've put that out on this week's notes. I'm looking at them now. But, you best tell me what's in there then, because I haven't got it up in front of me.
Yep, I have resent it through halfway through this one, but, they also report on the sad news of the deaths of two of the UK's most coveted carp. I'm not sure which one's there, though. I know Kitcher and Northy Park went, but I thought it was a few weeks back. Remember we spoke before about that competition that we were running? We had the Most Wanted competition.
Yes, I do. There was basically a prize for that. They picked was it the 100 most wanted carp in Britain, and or was it 100?
Yeah.
I can't remember, it's quite a lot. And there was a competition for the person that caught the most of them.
Yeah, it's set all the bounty hunters off, and they're halfway through the year now, so they're having a tally up, seeing who's caught what.
Cool.
And all of that's in there. But Yeah, with feet just, excuse me, I'm just having a stretch and cracking my sternum, if that was a crack you stirred. But yeah, I've got Matthew Lockett in there, explains his observational work and how it led to a new PB for him. Aaron Rillins has a goes out to Crete Lakes in France, that's a memorable trip. Dave Malt ends a year-long wait to get amongst the Acton Burnell biggies. And don't forget to enter that competition and win.
Yep, so if all the latest features, all the latest news and competitions and all sorts of stuff, get a Carp Talk this week and every week from pocketmags.com, the digital version, and from your local news agents, or have a look at the stock is okay on the Carp Talk website. That's it for us. I'm packing, I'm all excited, heading off to Lake Bled tomorrow. 24 hours travelling before we get there, obviously, but I cannot wait. And I'm going to try and do I'm going to do some in-session stuff from the lake. We stay on the campsite that does have Wi-Fi, so I'm going to attempt to get a Carpcast out if the internet connection is good enough to record. Failing that, Mark, I think what you might be able to do is you record at your end, you just ring me as normal, you record at your end and then email me the file, and I think we'll still be able to get a carp cast out next week from the lake, and hopefully we'll have lots of stories of big carp, beautiful scenery, naked sunbathers,
and let's hope you've not got half the lake roped off because they're spawning.
Or
thinking half, about spawning.
Half the leg roped off because they're not spawning.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you'll have a great trip. I'm kind of envious, but that's life. Have a good one.
Cool. Till next time. We'll see you then.
Check out the website at www.thecarpcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise, and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.